Good morning, Honorable Tebekhulu.
Unjani Mhlekazi?
Ya, siphila kakuhle nawe kangoku. Into enayo iCape Town ayindithandi mina.
Hey, mina ndisekhaya, ndisezilalini lapho kwaCokugcula empangeni.
Ndisekapa mna iCape Town indifakele i-snow from time to time. The weather is not so good here.
Hayi, ube ngcono icotshe Mhlekazi.
Hayi, ndikhe ndaya kwidoktha isolo.
Hey.
Yiyo le nto ndivukileyo namhlanje.
Yes.
It's 1 minute to go, Mastole.
Yes, Sir President.
Okay.
Good morning, Honorable Members, Chairperson. Lydia from
Good
City
morning,
Time.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chairperson. Irene Machenjo, Public Service Commission here, Acting DJ.
Good morning, ma'am.
I hope everyone is well. Empangeni, kwasacebe cool.
I'm feeling
good.
Ngiyashisa ngapha kwela kithi. It's too much.
Members, let me now get ready to start the meeting. It's now 9:30. Let me take this opportunity to welcome all the honorable members of the portfolio committee, the honorable minister, honorable deputy minister, the auditor general, to this portfolio committee meeting, whose intention is to receive audit outcome reports for financial year 2019-2020 from the AG, and then get a briefing by DPSA and its entities on the annual report for 2019-2020 financial year. And lastly, receives a briefing from Public Service Commission on the annual report for 2019-2020 financial year. By that, I'm trying to welcome everybody to the meeting. We have received only one apology so far, but I will check with the Mastole if there are other apologies he has received. We received the apology from Honorable Malati. Is there any apology that has come in lately, Mastole?
Yes, Chair. Thank you so much, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members and colleagues from the Department. We just received one apology from Honorable Komane, who is not able to also attend the meeting. We have also received an apology from the Deputy Minister, Honorable Chikunga, who will be joining the committee meeting later on, Chair. He has got another engagement.
Okay. Now, I think the committee will accept those apologies because they are done officially. Without any further waste of time, can I now invite the Auditor General? I don't know who have you prepared to give us this report, AG, but the floor is yours anyway.
Okay, Chair, the presenter from AG, Chair, is Mr. Mulingwe Radelani. He is trying to connect as this picture.
Okay,
I think it's that.
Okay, yeah. I can see the he is now flighting the report or the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Welcome. Take the floor immediately. appoints Ms. Rabelani.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've also just shown my video. I'll show it just for maybe a few seconds so you know who you are talking to, Chairperson. And thank you for this opportunity. We've sent you the slides, and I've also put it up on the screen. Thank you. So I'll start with the reputation promise that we have as the Auditor General of South Africa. We have a constitution mandate, and as the Supreme Audit Institution of South Africa, we exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. And I think the reason why we are here today also speaks to us enabling the oversight and us being here to give the audit outcome and also to discuss with you as the portfolio committee for PSA in terms of how the portfolio did. And then the next slide just talks to the next slide talks to our role as the AG, which I've also touched on when I was going through our reputation promise. So today we're going to reflect on the audit work that we've performed, and we'll assist you as the portfolio committee in your oversight role of assessing the performance of the entities within your portfolio. Some of the slides which we are standard and we've gone through them with you in the previous year, I'll go through them quite quickly, like the following slide, which is which shows the three areas that we audit. The first one being our financial statements, the second one being the performance information, and then the third area that we audit is the laws and regulations. And once we've looked at these three areas, it is then that we express one of these audit opinions that are on this slide. So without going into too much detail, the first one is an unqualified opinion with no findings, which we would normally call a clean audit. Then we'll have a financially unqualified opinion with findings. So there will be no findings on the financial statements, but maybe there will then be findings either under performance information or your laws and regulations. The next one is the qualification opinion, well-known statements. Then there's an adverse opinion, which we're saying that the financial statements, the information that was provided to us shows that the financial statements do not fairly present the assets of the entities or the department. Then the last one is the disclaim opinion, which is where we make our sample selections, ask for the information, and the department or entity does not provide us with the information. So we are in a position where we're saying that we cannot give an opinion on the financial statement. An important matter to note is the fact that we will be looking at the five departments and entities within the portfolio. All of our audit have a NSG vote, TTA, and PSC. And then at the bottom is just the legend that we'll be using. So if it's an unqualified, we'll be using green. If it's that will be clean audit, and then for yellow, it will then be unqualified with findings. I will not go through the rest because in this portfolio, fortunately, we do not have a qualification, an adverse disclaimer, or any outstanding audit. Then we'll be normally on the slide, I'll be using a green up arrow, which is for improvement, a yellow arrow facing to the side, which is showing unchanged audit outcomes, and if we show any red facing down, would be a regression. This slide, Chairperson, and the portfolio committee, we did go through it as well last year, but just as a reminder, this is an accountability wheel, which shows us that in order for us to have better audit results, we should then have a better life impact for our citizens. So we define our targets, that's part of the planning. And then part of the doing is where we implement the basics, have our internal controls and supervision. And the part of checking is where all assurance providers are monitoring all the controls and making sure that everyone is doing what they should be doing. Then the next one, on the number five towards the left, is where we act by making sure that there's consequence management. And this accountability will, if everything is going well, it's where you will see that there would be an improvement or maintaining the, a good audit outcome within the portfolio. I would like to spend just a little bit more time on this slide, Chairperson. This slide is showing us our audit outcomes for the portfolio over the past 5 years. So if you look on the far right, on the graph there, you see that in 2015-16, we had two audits that were green, which is a clean audit, and that was DPSA and CPSI. And then we found that PSC, VOLT, and TTA were all unqualified. And if you check, if I fast forward to the current year that we are looking at this year, your 2019-20, we have four auditees obtaining a clean audit, and only one, unfortunately, which is TTA with an unqualified opinion. If I can just recap on this one, the unqualified opinion is where we're saying the financial statements were free from material errors, but in the area of, in this case, laws and regulations, there was a finding. So that is why we have one entity there, TTA, being yellow, and then the other four being green. And if I was to check, just to maybe go through the top right where it says movement, you will see that we have an improvement of two entities. Well done to DPSA and PSC for obtaining a clean audit. So those, the two that's indicated on the movement is showing those two departments. There was no regression, so well done again to everyone in the portfolio. And then the three is where the audit outcome did not change. CPSA and VOLT maintained their audit outcome of the clean audit, which they had received in the previous year. And TTA last year was an unqualified opinion, which did not change. As I mentioned earlier, Chairperson, there was no outstanding audit. We did sign a little bit late on NSG VOLT and TTA. However, as we are here today, there isn't any outstanding audit. So again, we commend the CPSI and NSG VOLT for retaining their clean audit and congratulate the PSC and PSC for obtaining their clean audit for the 2019-20 financial year. There has been an improvement, Chairperson, on the financial statement preparation, as none of the entities in this portfolio had any material adjustments affected to the annual financial statements submitted for audit purposes for all of them. NSG, TTA, as I mentioned, there's just one issue that we picked up on compliance with laws and regulations, which I will touch on as I go through my presentation. I mentioned, Chairperson, earlier on the quality of the financial statements improving. If you look there, number one, firstly, all the entities submitted their financial statements on time by the legislative date, which this year was extended to the 31st of July. So all five entities submitted their financial statements, and well done for that. This was the case in the previous year as well. Financial statements which were submitted without errors, there was an improvement, as you can see. Last year, three entities had submitted without any errors, and in the current year, we had all five auditees submitting financial statements which were without any material errors on them. Then the quality of final submission, obviously in this case we're saying that all five, because there was no adjustment, there was they submitted quality financial statements. So we commend the entities for submitting financial statements that are free from material statements. The next one is performance report. If you check the first one, we say performance reports which were submitted without errors. Last year we only had one, and in the current year we had three. So it was only NSG VOLT and NSG TTA where there were some material adjustments that were made to the performance report. the quality of financial submission after audit. After we've made the adjustments and vote, and TTA, all the entities' performance report were signed. So that is why you will see that 5 and on the 2019-20 financial year. So overall, in performance reporting, there was an improvement. Maybe I can just mention on this slide, without taking anything away from the portfolio, I would also just like to mention that due to the pandemic in the current year, we reduced the number of the programs that we had to audit. So there was a reduction of scope, which was discussed with management. So I'm not saying that maybe there would have been, the picture would have looked differently, but I just want to mention into the portfolio committee today. In the current year, we audited and reduced our scope in terms of the number of programs which we audited. So at the bottom there is just to show the type of findings that we had on both in TTA. There were none on usefulness, but we had the findings there on reliability, and that's where we make the adjustment. Chairperson, I mentioned earlier on that on TTA, TTA is the only auditee within the portfolio that did not obtain a clean audit, and this was unfortunately due to the area of consequence management. I'll go through more details as I continue with my presentation, but this we discussed with the management, and we also discussed with the new principal, and they have informed us that when we go back for the 2020-21 financial audit, financial year audit, the issue that we had picked up or that was there with regards to consequence management would have been addressed. I'll give you more details as we proceed on this matter. I would like also to touch on the status of internal control. I think this picture overall will talk to the audit outcome of the portfolio. Overall, it looks good, it looks green, which means everything is good. It's just three areas of concern. So the status of internal control, we normally look at them. On the far left, you see it's under leadership, financial performance and management, financial and performance management, and governance. So under governance and leadership, is all green. However, if we look at the record keeping, at vote, we had identified some issues there with regards to getting some of the information, just delayed in getting information. All the information was submitted, it's just that it was taking a little bit longer than the previous year, and we did discuss this with management as well. At TTA, we had an issue just around obviously the compliance, which I've already spoken to, and also daily and monthly controls. More information on this will be included in our management report, because some of these issues don't make it to your audit report, which is a public document. So any findings that has more details on this will be on the management report, which the management and our principal would have at vote at NFT. One of the areas that we look at is the assurance providers, which we look at. So basically what we look at here, we have to say that when it comes to the annual report credibility, what assurance are we getting from the different role players? So here we're saying that the annual report normally includes your financial statement and your performance information. So for the other, I'll start at the bottom from the good, from the areas where we had assurance provided for annual report credibility. So we're saying that we are getting assurance from audit committee for all the entities. This has stayed the same as previous year. Internal audit as well, executive authority, which is our minister, and also maybe just to mention the with our minister, I just want to express our gratitude to the minister for making time on last week for us to go through this slide with him before the meeting, and also to the deputy minister whom we met on Monday to discuss the audit outcome of the portfolio. And then when it comes to the accounting authority, for all the entities, we had assurance provided, which was green. And then for DPSA, we had just some issues. And one of the areas we discussed with management, as well as the minister and the deputy minister, was around the vacancies within the department. At the end of the year, the department was still working on this matter, but it's something that they've assured us that they're looking at. Senior management, we said they provide some assurance. This is not it's not a bad picture. However, the reason why it was put as yellow and not green was due to the fact that we had some findings which did not make it to the audit report. But for all the entities and departments, we had findings which were included in the management report. For this picture alone, we do not include CPSI because it's a small audit, so this area we did not cover it. But Chairperson, just on senior management, and yes, the picture being yellow, I would like to just maybe indicate that we never experienced any problems or issues with our management that we're dealing with on the audit, on all those audits, your CFOs, your account, your CFOs, your finance managers, and everyone was readily available. And even though we had a back and forth page, it was nothing more than just around technical issues and only normal audit issues. So there was never any issues that needed to be escalated, and we worked very well with the senior management as well. The next picture, the next slide that I'm going to go to is for financial health. I just want to mention here, Chairperson, to say all auditees in the portfolio are a going concern. And the reason why we do this assessment is to say if the auditees that are on your MCS, which is a cash basis, were to be on a accrual system, what would the picture look like? So this is an assessment that we do. We know that generally, obviously, because we're a public sector, we would normally not have major going concern because the entities get support from the government. However, this is just like to say, also, if we were to look at it from an accrual, what would be the picture looking like? Under revenue management at TTA, we have picked up that there is an issue around collection of debt. Our debtors in payment provision is very high at TTA. This means that we are generating and TTA is experiencing some challenges when it comes to collecting that money from the public sector. This is actually, an area of concern, especially because all the departments get their own annual appropriation, so they should not have any issues with regards to paying TTA. So this is just one area that TTA needs to improve on and work on. Then we're saying that for PSC, if we're on the accrual basis, PSC would have made a loss in the current year. Then on liquidity, so this is where we're saying that your current liabilities, what you owe to your suppliers versus your current assets, is your current liability would be higher than your assets. And if all your creditors were to say we want our money today, you would then have a challenge. This would be for PSC, DPSA, and NSG Roads. Again, overall, this like I said, all the entities are going concern, and this is just for noting and really just to say that what will be the picture if we're on a cross basis. The next slide is about unauthorized expenditure. Unauthorized expenditure is really saying that how did the departments do when it comes to the budget. So if it was there any audit within the portfolio that went over their budget, and then we noticed that none of the entities in the portfolio incurred unauthorized expenditure in this current year and also in the previous year, which is good and well done for that. The next slide talks about fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and just to refresh your mind, fruitless and wasteful expenditure is where we're saying that you incurred an expenditure that was in vain, and you could have avoided it had reasonable steps been taken. So the department or the entity sees no value for money. I think also here, if you check, Chairperson, there is amounts of 8,000 with regards to the current year and 10,000 with regards to the previous year. Ideally, we would like this to be zero, obviously, because we don't want the government money to be wasted. However, I would like also to mention that this is a good picture overall, considering what's happening in our public sector. So the 8,000 for the 2019-20 financial year represents a non-compliant with the PSA. So there was an issue around the flight that was missed due to incorrect names, and also 3,000 rand due to late cancellation of shuttle services booked for an employee. So these expenses could have been avoided. But the good picture also at the bottom right, we see that all the entities and departments that normally would have the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, they actually do investigation and either write off or recover the money from the people that were responsible for the expenditure. The next picture talks to irregular expenditure. And irregular expenditure is incurred in contravention of any key legislation. But I also just want to mention here that goods may have been delivered, but the prescribed process not followed. So the difference between this picture and the previous picture is that on the irregular expenditure, you would find that the department did get, let's say, for example, the whatever goods were ordered, but let's say in this case, pandemic, in the pandemic, we were able to get sanitizers, we did not follow, we would not have followed a proper procedure. So you did get the goods, you did get the value, it's just that you did not follow proper process. The issue around the sanitizers and the gloves was just an example, just to show that it is what happens normally within the procurement process. If I can just maybe just go back to 2017-18, the picture was sitting at 7.44 million. And last year, 2018-19, the regional expenditure was sitting at 2.56 million. And in the current year, the amount is 607,000 rand. And this is due to a contract that was entered to in the previous year. So if we're looking at the portfolio for the 2019-20, there was no new irregular expenditure. This is an amount that's coming from the previous year. And that was a PSC where there was a mandatory IT goods or services which were not procured through FITA for PSC. So again, in the current year, no new irregular expenditure, but this is just coming from the previous year. And also it's good to know that any irregular expenditure from the previous year is always investigated within this portfolio. As you can see at the bottom right, for 2018-19, it would have been irregular expenditure from 17-18, and in the 2019-20 year, it would have been irregular expenditure from 18-19. So all the department and entities within the portfolio, they do investigate the irregular expenditure. I also just want to mention here, without going into too much detail, of just to say that for our portfolio, there was no ODT that was selected for the pilot team of the material irregularity. So irregular expenditure is one of the areas that we look at due to the non-compliance. If we're looking at material irregularity, we would go an extra step to say, was there a financial loss that was incurred by the department when irregular expenditure was incurred? And if there was a financial loss, that's when we would then say it's a material irregularity, and the department or entity, they need to go and investigate and make sure that whoever is found to be responsible needs to pay whatever money was lost by the department or entity. And if the accounting officer or those who are charged with governance are unable to recover or investigate, that's when a certificate of debt will be issued. are not able to investigate or recover, this would be recoverable from you. And even if you leave the department or you leave the entity, this certificate of debt will follow you wherever you go. So this is just an area to say, please do watch out and continue to make sure that there is no irregular expenditure incurred within the portfolio. So for this year, like I said, this portfolio was not selected for material irregularity, but we do not know yet as to whether in the 2021 financial year, PSA will be included in this material irregularity. As I was talking about supply chain management, I also just want to indicate that there was an improvement in supply chain compliance within the portfolio. 100% of all the audits did not have material findings. And when I say material findings, I just want to mention that there was no findings that ended up in the audit report, but there was a few findings that ended up in the management report, and that is why they have a yellow and not a green. But for all the entities in the department, there was nothing that ended up on the audit report, which speaks directly to the fact that we had our unqualified opinion and also clean audits. I think also good to mention, you can see the improvement. If we're looking at 2018, we had a robot on the right hand side, and in the current year we have mostly green. I spoke earlier to say that for TTA, the reason why there was interest due to the fact that there was an issue around laws and regulation, which was specific to consequence management. But this picture is just to give more details there to see what happened. There were some allegations on financial / fraud and SCM misconduct, which were reported in the year 2017-18. When we spoke to management with regards to this matter, there are 5 instances to Treasury and also the SIU. However, Treasury and SIU, due to the nature of the transgression allegations, they then came back to say, no, NSGPPA, you need to investigate this on your own. So during this process of moving between NSGTTA and Treasury and also SIU, there was a delay in investigations. But as I mentioned, the management also meant to inform us that they will act on this and make sure that this is addressed when we go back. So just to mention, give an example, it was where there was allegations of bribe employees. There were allegations that they were using training material for personal private work during business hours and all forms. This again, just to mention, Chairperson, these allegations from the audit side, we are not able to give any input on this as we did not do our investigations ourselves, and also the industry is still busy with the investigation. So maybe if there's any additional information we want on this, we'll be able to get it from management. Because also, just as a reminder, from AG side, our responsibility when it comes to fraud is to say we are not coming to give assurance that there was no fraud within the department. If we do come across any fraud risk factors, we will discuss them. But the prevention and detection of fraud remains the responsibility of management and those charged with governance. This portfolio snapshot, Chairperson, I will not go through it, but it's just a one-picture view of everything that I've been speaking about. On the top right-hand side is just our outcome. And if we go to the bottom right at the end, they talk about the regular expenditure, which we spoke to, and then supply chain and compliance on the middle right. And then in the middle center, in the center there is the performance report. Nothing new on this picture, but everything we've discussed is just mentioned. One of the areas areas that we look at is just the root causes. And MJ, we're only looking at the root causes of CTA because it was the audit was the only one that did not get a clean audit. So we're saying that one of the root causes is the fact that there is slow or no response in improving key controls. So this, for example, it would be to speak to the fact that those allegations were, example, were allegations from 2017-18, and right now we are almost going to 2021, and some of the investigations are not finalized. Yes, there were reasons why they were not finalized, but we say overall we need to act with a sense of agency and address any issues identified. We also said that the management should prepare regular, accurate, and complete performance reports, supported and evidenced by reliable information. There were adjustments that were made, as I mentioned earlier, to the performance reports, for example, at TTA and VOT. The next slide, this one speaks to one of the initiatives that we as the Auditor General of South Africa have, where we normally select maybe a couple of audits and say we want to do a value add, and we call it the status of records review. This is loosely put what we call an early warning sign. We come and we say it's not the end of the year yet, but we would like to look at your books and try to identify any areas of concern that may derail the progress in the preparation of financial and performance reports, as well as the laws and regulations. And then what we then do, can go and fix this before the end of review. We did it at DPSA only. It was done in the current year and also in the previous year. When I say current year, I'm talking about the year that we're looking at or giving audit outcome. So we looked at the period 1 April 2019 to 31 December 2019. We looked at the areas that are listed there. For example, are under oversight and monitoring, IT management, performance, procurement and contract management, and performance management. And we found that at DPSA, they attained an unqualified audit opinion with no findings. And also just from our review that we did, there wasn't any significant matters that we identified. So this is just, like I said, one of those areas where we said, as the AG, we would like to work with you as a department to make sure that we improve or maintain a good audit outcome. Our overall message from everything that we've gone through today, Chairperson, is just to say there was an overall improvement in the portfolio where all our four out of the five entities obtained a clean audit, and then which was an improvement from the previous year, we only had two. I won't go into too much detail. We've gone through NCTTA, the issues there and the root causes, and we are saying that there is a need just to keep a close eye on compliance with laws and regulations and performance reporting. Our recommendations to the department and the entities, there must be timely review and quarterly and annual performance reports, as well as the financial statements. This one is not just to say we're speaking only to CTA, but to all the departments and agencies to say, in order for the portfolio to maintain the good audit outcome, we do not need to rest. We need to continue that all those monthly, quarterly reviews are being done, and quarterly reporting are being done, so that if there is any issue that needs to fix, can be identified on a timely basis. Again, just to recap around TTA, we're saying that we need to ensure that there's adequate systems for collection and recording of revenue received from training provided, which should be implemented. We also spoke to the minister, as I've said already, and we're making a recommendation to say the minister should request the management to provide feedback on the implementation and progress of action plans to ensure improvement in TTA and maintaining a good audit outcome on the other four ODTs. This is speaking specifically to our management report, which, as I've mentioned earlier, do not make it to the public eye, but there is findings that management need to come up with action plans for and make sure that those root causes and any other issues are dealt with before they become material and end up making their way to the auditory report. Chairperson, this is my story for the day, and if there's any questions, I'll
thank you very much, AG. Can I now open discussions by honorable members? You'll do that by show of hands. Let me see if there are anyone to. I can see Honorable Clark. Okay, Honorable Clark, take the platform. It's you so far.
thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the report, AG. I would just like to ask, the recommendations that has been put into the report, for example, the recording of the financial statements in terms of training and that, Chairperson, I very much like the departments in order to give us their action plans as to how they are going to improve as to the findings of the AG report and bring that to the committee so that we can see what they're going to do in terms of their action plans in order to address the issues that have been raised. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Clark. I don't see any other honorable member who wants to comment on this one. I can therefore thank you very much, AG. You are free to stay on with us listening to other presentations that are going to be made. But if you want to leave, you are also free to leave, AG. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. And before maybe we leave, I'll just like to find out if my deputy business executive has anything maybe to say. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Rabelani. Honorable Chair, I do not have anything to add. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson? Can I just ask before we move on to the next next point on the agenda, in particular, in what I've raised, I would really much like that to be a resolution, Chairperson, so that it doesn't just go by the way, you know, so that the departments actually do bring those action plans to our committee for us to see. Thank you.
Before you leave, AG, I see now Honorable Sommer has raised the hand. Honorable Stormer, take the platform.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members and colleagues and the AG. Probably, Chair, there's only one item that I wanted to comment on, not necessarily a question, but a guidance from the AG. But let me start also by appreciating and applaud the department and its entity in terms of achieving their clean audit report. I'm not saying that because we're uploading this, the fish for swimming, but we are coming from far, and I think there is a green light that will influence other departments in terms of good governance, as it were. I would like to know from Ms. Rabelani whether is there anything that you would like the committee to pay attention to. I'm raising that, Chair, because of yesterday's engagement. Also, the AG had something to say that expect the committee also to look at, probably one might assist as well, notwithstanding the more operational administrative issues that he has raised, that the department has committed itself to look at that, which are not material to be in part of the audit report findings as it were, but appreciating and welcoming the report, that is very encouraging. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Osomo. I don't see any other person who wants to make a comment on the platform. Therefore, thank you very much, AG. Thank you, Honorable Members. Can we now move to the next the briefing by PPSA and its entities? Is the Honorable Minister on the platform?
Not as yet, Chair. Not as yet, Chair.
Chairperson?
What's that?
Hello, Chair. It's the principal.
Oh, it's the principal. Okay.
Yes, Chair. We wish to request, Chair, as the NSG to report first. We've got a training that is underway, so and at least two of the colleagues who are here are also involved in the training of ministers that is currently underway. So we are attending this meeting on the sidelines of that. So if the committee agrees, if we could, the NSG could be allowed to come in first, Chair. Thank you very much.
That request is granted, Professor Ngaweni. You can immediately make your presentation to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just do an intro, and then the CFO will do our presentation. Phindile Mkhwanazi is the CFO. She also happens to have been the acting principal during the period under review. So she was managing the institution for about 10 months. Just to say, Chair, to yourself and the honorable members here in the committee and my colleagues, that we what the colleagues from the AG didn't say about the NSG was that we nearly failed to comply, because on the 31st, for the date at which we were supposed to submit our financials, we had a major cyber attack. The people who wanted some ransom took over our server, so we had no access to our server for a period of more than a month, in fact, and we had to go through emergency procurement arrangements, going through CETA and National Treasury until we recovered our servers. So this was a major risk in our ability to comply, to submit the financial on time. But we reported, we spoke to the AG. In fact, when I personally called the late AG, may his soul rest in peace, when I called him to inform him that we have had this misfortune, the Mr. Makwetu said to me, Principal, you are less than a year old in that institution. Do whatever it takes in the next 14 days to reconstruct all the financials and information that we have lost. We don't want to have to be greeted by a negative audit on your first term as a principal at the NSG. And thanks to the CFO who's going to present now and her team, they reconstructed the books, and that is why today we're able, the AG is able to give the report that she just presented. So if you allow me, Chair, I'll ask the CFO to also zoom in on some of the amber or the flashing lights that were indicated by the AG, and then we can deal with some of the performance information later. Thank you, Chair. She's already uploading the presentation. Phindile?
Thank you. Come in, CFO.
Okay, thank you, Principal. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to all honorable members. We're just going to highlight the main summaries on the report. We did provide an overview for a five-year period, but we'll skip that and allow the members to read it at leisure to see how the NSG did all this work, but we'll focus on the highlights for the year and the financial performances. So just skip through to slide 10. Okay, slide 10 is where we look at the summary for the year. The highlights for the year is that we had 27 targets, and we've achieved 23 of those targets, which should translate to 85%. With regards to the training numbers, we trained 46,378 people against a target of 53,783, which is an 86% achievement. We did have to cancel a few of our trainings. As you know, public servants at times do book the training to later in the year. So in March, it's 2 weeks before the lockdown, we had to be cancelling the training because of what was happening, and we had to postpone it to the new year. So some of those numbers were affected. The annual revenue, we managed to generate 150 million, which was above the budget that we had for the year. The trading account, which is the account that we use and we have to generate our own revenue, closed with a surplus of 35.2 million. Previous year in 2018-19 was 14 million, so it was a good improvement for the year. We also want to report, as the AGS reported, we did go through the audit, and we have a clean audit for the vote, which is program one, and the trading account, we have an unqualified audit. We are aware, we've spoken to AG, some of the problems that were raised, which they've highlighted in their report, is issues around document that was supplied to the not on time. We experienced a bit of a hack during this time, and there was delayed providing information to the AG that impacted on the quality as well. We have been speaking to National Treasurer about the systems, that we do not have proper systems for a trading account, and we wanted to be given the resources to be able to procure a proper system that can be linked, not to be manually reconciled, which is what we are picking. This is a problem. Up until we have a solution, we will not be able to get a clean audit in the trading account. We need the resources. We need the money to buy the proper system that will allow us to be able to record things on the system and not be recorded manually, which will move us to the next level. And we are hoping that they will listen to us in this year and be able to give us those resources that we are requesting. Highlights for the annual performance is that we launched the Nyodela program. The Nyodela program is a compulsory entry requirement for SMS. Anyone applying to join the SMS must have a certificate from the Nyodela. We have had a lot of people registering. We, for the 19-20, we had 261 people who enrolled for it, and 136 of them completed, which is an 84% completion. We've seen such a drive in this year with the lockdown, and currently we have over 7,000 people enrolled on this program, which is gaining attraction for us, and we're very proud that we're able to do this. We've also partnered with DPME on the development of training material for theory of change for planning in the public service. We were able to train 1,706 learners on this program, which included planners, M&E practitioners, internal audits, financial officials, and program managers. We also did the CAID program. We were able to take our CAID program and duplicate it and do it in the region, for which was called CAID Africa, and we trained total 100 people there from 25 countries. When it comes to mandatory programs, that we collaborated with the Northwest Ikasong School of Governance, which resulted in an uptake of 1,019 officials trained in various programs in the year. We also had the executive induction program for DDGs and DGs that took place on the 17th to the 19th March, likely before the close down. And six of those delegates were from National, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, KZN, and Northwest. We had the guest speaker, Advocate Thabo Mokoena, DG of DPNR. Ms. Mpumi Mpofu, which used to be a DG in the DPME, and now currently the CEO of AXA. On concession values and principle, that we had an assessment evaluation that was done by Public Service Commission. I will not go into the details, but I will allow the members to look into it. We did very well when you look at our scoring, good systems, we scored about 82%, professional culture, 80%, professional behavior, 71%, and good institutional processes, 73%. Obviously, we can pick up even from the audit that there is room for us to improve, especially on the processes. Now, looking at the non-financial performance information, the highlights we've already said, we had a clean audit, and the other one that we just want to mention at the high level is that we did comply with payment of service providers within 30 days. Then to highlight the one area where we didn't achieve, which is also highlighted by ATA as a concern, the average of days for collection, we had a target of 45 days for our clients to pay us. We had an average of 56 days. This is due to us. Between January and March, we saw an increase in requests for invoices. We have a system of paying in advance for the clients, but because of COVID, some of these invoices were not able to be paid within the time frame that we had set for them. So it's an area to be looked at. And we do have an old debt that we had National Treasury helping us with that, but we haven't been able to resolve it completely. We're still working on that. We will try new strategies to improve. As the Honourable Member has requested, we'll share our action plan to address the concerns that the AG has raised. I will then go to Program 2. We've highlighted the number of programs that the training numbers that we've achieved. Mainly, because we didn't fully achieve the numbers, you will see here that we said in total is 86%. So the trainings on the one area, which is all the training, including the compulsory induction, we had a target of 46,783. We achieved 90% of that. When it comes to orientation of unemployed youth graduates, we trained 2,189, which is a 73% achievement. We had some of those courses also postponed because of the COVID that happened, where we had plans, especially in the Northwest. Then on the mandatory programs, we managed to train 2,387, which is a 60% achievement. I will then move on to the financial information. Highlighting as well on the screen where we're showing that the kind of programs we're able to introduce due to COVID, we had a community governance for South Africa program that went through. This one was showing the one that went through from the 7th to the 18th of September. We will share more of the programs that we're doing that can also interest the members as well. On the financial information, when you look at the voter count, which mainly deals with Pokemon, the allocation that we had for the year was 187.9 million. We managed to spend 97% of that budget, which means we underspent by 4.9 million. This is mainly due to compensation of employees. We had a savings or underspending on compensation of employees of about 3 million there, mainly because of the vacancies that we had. As you know, our principal was only appointed in March, so he only had 1 month in his position, and some of the positions were also vacant for a longer part of the year, which has now been resolved. All the positions that are funded within the program one are filled, and we will not have this problem in the new year. So that was the main problem. When it comes to capital expenditure, we also didn't spend fully the budget there, mainly due to the timing of some of the things that we had on order that were not delivered on time. They will now be affecting the new budget. On the trading account, highlights there is that on the cost fees, we managed to exceed the budget. We had a budget of 143 million as our target. We managed to raise 145, which is about 2 million over the budget, which is a good thing for us in this year. But we also did receive an additional allocation from Treasury during the year, which helped us to have the positive surplus at the end of the year with reduced expenditure. We did save on some of the training expenses as well on the compensation of employees. We, as members also aware, we did indicate in the previous meetings that we were looking at restructuring the organization, so we couldn't fully place the vacant posts in the year, especially in this program too, while we're trying to change the model of how we deliver as an organization. That process is now at its finalization stage. Minister is going to be approving the structure, and we'll then be able to start filling the critical posts that we have within the program too. Those are the highlights. We ended up with a surplus of 35 million on this, which is an accounting surplus for this year. And we're also grateful for some of the donations that we had from the EU for programs which are intangible assets, the programs that they paid for that were able to roll out. On the HR oversight, just to highlight, the NSG has got a total of 231 posts, especially in the previous year. We had 205 of those posts filled, and 19 of them were vacant. The vacancy rate was 8.2. On a positive note, when it comes to gender representation, 57.5% of our employees are females, and in the SMS, we have 55.8. Youth are sitting at 24.1, and people with disabilities are 2.8%. So this is the demographics for the NSG. We're still working to improve, especially on the youth target. We have a target of about 30% on youth. Chairperson, I would like to end there the highlights of the report for the previous year. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you, Chair. So in a nutshell, Chair, that's our situation. Maybe just one comment, Chair, because the honorable member, I think Michelle raised it earlier on the issues that have got amber, that were highlighted by the AG. Those matters indeed have been attended to. So it relates to, say, a colleague, say myself, I blow a whistle and say the CFO is corrupt, and then both Treasury and other authorities say there is no evidence, there is no evidence available. It becomes too costly to investigate. It becomes extremely difficult. And the issue that the AG was raising is that if other authorities were saying they were unable to, because you can't be spending a lot of money searching for something where there is no evidence, we ought to have closed those officially, and we didn't do so. Half of them we did, another half we didn't close. We are dealing with those matters to remove them completely. And the whistleblower arrangement remains intact at the NSG. The challenge is, if you ask the any other authority to investigate, and they do step one, step two, step three, because they think that it is alleged that Pindi might have given a training contract to a friend, and you check, you do a three-step check, and you are unable to track it, then you incur a lot of cost trying to find it out. And the AG says, if you're unable to track trace any of those such matters, you have to officially close it. And this is what had not happened. They were not officially closed. And now they've been closed. And lastly, Chair, and we're having a difficulty at the NSG to explain this even inside government itself. We run two accounts, the vote one, which has got a clean audit, that's money coming from Treasury. Up to 70% of our budget is self-made. So we must go and sell products, which is training. We must recover the cost, and we must charge fees. The difficulty, Chair, is that there has been years of underinvestment in the systems that will help us ensure that the trade account runs like a business, because it is a business. You know, if you are unable to sell something and they will charge an appropriate fee for what you are selling, a cost reflective tariff, we are able to recover your money on time, and we have a robust ICT system to do so, you will experience some of the issues that the colleagues from the AG have raised. I'm highlighting it. We do understand the fiscal constraints. We have a two. There's two ways that we are planning to deal with these matters, Chairperson and members of the committee. Firstly, we are now launching bespoke or custom-made programs where we can charge a premium, which means the costs are higher than the cost, because the costs we charge are below what you would find anywhere else in the country, including in public higher education. By doing so, our margin can be, you know, 1 or 2% higher, which means we can build a reserve fund for us to invest in ICT. And secondly, we think there are possibilities of exploring debt stream income by working with development partners. We currently have an EU arrangement. Most of the money is committed. The EU contract expires next year because of COVID. It's been extended to December, but the money is committed. We have officially, through our minister, made a declaration that we are interested to continue with this development partnership with the EU, and that part of what we think we will gain out of that arrangement might be the resources to help us invest in a robust ICT system that will help us sell our products, recover the money on time, and run as efficient as any other business will do. So those are some of the strategies we are putting in place to help out, to help the school to raise some resources, because we know we can't go to the fiscals because of the constraints as they are currently. We were affected adversely by COVID, as we had reported before this committee before. Significantly, for members to note, in the past, the NSG did most of its training face-to-face. We're shifting to virtual, and most of the training happening, except for the one this week of the ministers, most of the training is becoming virtual. However, in pursuing virtual training, honorable members need to note, you cannot do some of the free online courses with frontline employees of the state who are at junior levels in government and other organs of state, because they may not have data and laptops and so on. Therefore, what we have opted to do is to apply for zero rating for NSG e-learning products. And the indications are that we are likely to succeed. If we do succeed, honorable members, to be zero rated for our e-learning courses, it will be a game changer for the South African Public Service, because the police, the nurses, and other most junior employees, even at local government level, will be able to access NSG e-learning courses like the ethics course without them having to worry about paying data and so on. But this also requires that we must invest in ICT teaching and learning systems. And we are trying to do that under this very difficult circumstance. So we're shifting to virtual, doing a lot of things there, supported online type interventions, and introducing bespoke programs where we charge premium, and also looking for donor funding. And how we do with donor funding is not just funding for the sake of it, but donors who can sponsor people to participate in some of the premium programs. Thereby, we can increase our margins and have the money to invest in our ICT ecosystem. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Principal. Honorable members, can we discuss this NSG report before we get the Center for Public Service Innovation to address the request that the Principal has made to the committee? This report is open for discussions. Can I see members who want to speak on this report? Can I see hands, honorable members? Honorable Lesoma, and then after that it will be Honorable Musipe. Honorable Lesoma.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you, Principal, and the team. And your job well done. I will qualify why I'm saying that, because when we started last day in this administration, we were still talking about the reconfiguration of the NSG in terms of the business portfolio and also the general part of it, which I think by the look of things, the way we were also have needed to have continuous savings, that we have struck a balance without any drastic tangible organizational review or configuration. And also there have been no job losses, which one really appreciate that. Having said that, Chair, one would be looking forward in the response in terms of the action plan, so that we can oversight in the response of Honorable Clark, that the department, the NSG will provide us moving forward. The very last one, Chair, which is more personal, if I may use that word, is that we are still looking forward to the courses that will be tailored made for us as the members of this committee, which will empower us, because learning is a continuous exercise, to do our more alive, active oversight, as it were. And congratulations for the executive training that is underway, which will then, in return, really for money for better performance of all departments and lesser departments appearing before SCOPA. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Soma. And Honorable Mutipe.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And I also like to welcome the presentation and also the presenters. I've got only one question here for NSG. Is when will the moratorium be lifted on filling of position to allow the finalization of an investigation on the repositioning of the center? Thank you so much, Chair.
Honorable Musipe, Professor Ngaweni, you can comment, or because I didn't, you can make comment and also respond to the question that Honorable Mutipe has raised. The floor is yours, Professor.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just a bit of an advert. We, a few weeks ago, have concluded the memorandum of understanding between the NSG and Parliament, between myself and the Secretary of Parliament. What this MOU does, Chair, and there's some members here who may have memory of this, allows us to return to the program that was run between the NSG, VET and Parliament, where members of Parliament are offered an opportunity to study for the diploma in public leadership with the University of Witwatersrand. So that's an advert. We will be finalizing the details, and very soon through the Secretary of Parliament, members will be invited to participate in that program. We're expanding this idea of partnering strategically with higher education institutions in South Africa, depending on the expertise that they have. For example, we're finalizing an MOU with the University of Johannesburg because they have expertise on 4IR. So in order to bring some of these expertise into the public service, we partner with that institution because they've got capacity to do so. As the CFO indicated, we have MOUs with 5 other universities in the country, and we're training public servants, especially those at deputy director level and assistant director level, those MOUs who want to do management development programs. In all these programs, either you get credits to a higher diploma, or you get a module or any other form of recognition that is offered by these universities. By doing so, we address questions or concerns around issues of quality. That's part of the safeguard. Equally, we've had partnership with institutions globally. Just this morning, an hour ago, We concluded a memorandum of understanding with Thunderbird School of Global Leadership, which is a business school of Arizona State University in the U.S., and we will, there's a master's program available, and we will be advertising that, in, including members of this committee and members of parliament. They themselves are eligible to participate there. We're fundraising aggressively. They are already offering 70% discount on the fees. We're fundraising aggressively so that if we can get private funds, the cost of members or any public servant participating in that program can be reduced further. Just as the member indicated, now Honorable Sommer, we are training ministers this week. We've partnered with Bates School of Government. We've brought the, among the best professors in the country to provide a capacity building program for members of the executive. We've got executive mayors, the ministers, deputy ministers, as well as MECs from all parts of the country who are participating in that program. Next week, Monday, we're starting another program on agriculture and poverty alleviation with the university in China through Zoom. It's a virtual course. In the next 2 months, we're starting another program with Ecole, which is a premier public school of public policy in Paris in the EU. In fact, you don't work for the EU Commission unless you've studied there, and we'll be offering that kind of a program to public servants in South Africa, including members of the legislative sector. So we are excited with the reorganization that is taking place. Now, this does then require us to finalize our organizational review, and the three things are happening in that regard. Number one, we are engaging, hopefully by next week, the minister will have signed the new structure of the NSG. There are no job losses. We've done a realignment of our structure at a very high level. We have a chief directorate responsible for executive programs, which include legislative sector and local government. We've got the chief directorate dealing with the cadets and youth and entry level in the public sector. We've got those dealing with middle management and professionalization, as well as the chief directorate dealing with the senior management across the public sector. So when they create a program for senior managers, it will be a senior manager who works for parliament or a legislature or a municipality or a government department or even an SOE, for as long as they're in a particular band of senior management within the state. Secondly, as the DG PPSA will indicate, Chair, there is work now underway to amend PAMA. Once PAMA is amended, the clause in PAMA that declares NSG to be a higher education institution will be amended. We will remain a government department as we are. Budget votes number 12, using the trade account and other flexibility that we have been given to provide quality training across the public sector. No job losses are expected. In fact, the future of NSG requires that we must employ, you know, data analysts, you must employ, you know, economists and those type of, you know, smart skills, so that when in future we come before the portfolio committee, we can produce reports for you, complete with analytics that tells you who is attending training at NSG and what is also is the impact of the programs that we are conducting at NSG. Already we need to have reports of people who are attending our courses. They do give us feedback, and if the committee is keen, we can share some of those programs with the committee, because we're interested to understand how those who experience our service feel about us as a school. So yes, the organizational review should be completed in the next fortnight. We are hopeful that by the end of this month of November, we will have completed the process, and then starting in January, PAMA amendment will ensue, which will then make some amendments. The thing that needs to be resolved there, and we are hoping that this committee could help us champion it politically, is this conundrum that the NSG must compete with everybody else in the public sector. So we have no exclusivity. And yet our fees are very low. and our costs are high because we need to retain some high-level skills, but we must. So we have to find a mechanism where some of the programs offered by the NSG, we need to have exclusivity because that will guarantee our financial sustainability. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Professor Ngaweni. Your request is granted. Can we now invite Center for Public Service Innovation?
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. This is Lydia Subukedi, Acting Executive Director of the CPSI. I'm going to try and share my presentation. Let me request Desiree, the Acting CFO, to share from her side. I seem to struggle a bit. But I will start with the presentation. Okay, thanks, Desiree. Put it on presentation mode, please. Thank you, Chair. Our presentation, I'll try to focus on key issues. As already indicated, Desiree, move to slide number 3. Slide 3, as reported by the AG, we CPSI managed to get their third clean audit in the room the fourth one over the past 5 years. On the next slide, it shows the performance. Honorable members and chairperson, you know that CPSI is a very small outfit. We had a total of 8 targets, of which 2 targets were not achieved. In the next slide, I just want to highlight that we've attended to all recommendations on the external audit coming from the previous year, so we don't have anything outstanding. The next slide indicates some of our targets that we did. One target which I'll speak to is that we did not achieve the target where we're supposed to develop 2 innovative solutions, and the reasoning for that is that solutions that were developed in the previous financial year got carried over. It's very difficult to fix the innovation process within 1 year. So that's one of the challenges that we have as a Center for Public Service Innovation, that which is also common in this innovation research and development space, even in the private sector, that when you come up with a new solution, you can only estimate how long it will take. Sometimes it's a quick process, but in most of the times, the innovation cycle actually exceeds 1 year. And as indicated here, we couldn't dump the projects that we're working on from the previous financial year. That's something you would have finalizing the other projects. I would like to also report that when we report on the current financial year, more details will come regarding those 2 projects. We're working with Home Affairs so that, as an example, if you are in a queue at one service delivery point and the system goes offline, the center manager doesn't have to call head office. Somebody will be able to pick up that Acacia Home Affairs service point has gone down, and you are able to put remedial measures immediately without waiting for them to send an email or to call head office and so forth. So working on that solution, which has already been piloted in 2 sites, just to optimize the solution. We're working with social innovators who came up with this solution. Members, I would also like to indicate that we had 2 replication projects. Sorry about that. That we worked on, we're able to finalize one. Unfortunately, the second one was not finalized by end of March. We had a number of delays during the financial year, and we were supposed to work with correctional services, which then withdrew from the project. We ended up having to use our own funds to procure the standing boxes. These are assistive devices for children who have cerebral palsy. Unfortunately, the service provider couldn't deliver by the end of the financial year. As you know, we lost the last 2 weeks of the financial year due to COVID, but by the second quarter of this financial year, those spending boxes were delivered to a first aid site to assist children with cerebral palsy to be more independent. The one project that we are able to facilitate, which we hope it will be rolled out even further in the country, is the maternity filing project, which was done between Greater Accra Hospital and Prince Mshinini Hospital, which is in KZN. This solution, you know, the queues in hospitals, mostly it's chronic patients coming just to pick up chronic medication. So what happens here is that Prince Mshinini decided to issue patients with three prescription certificates or prescription notes, so that when you come to pick up your prescription, you don't have to go and draw your file. You go straight to pharmacy. So it helped in making sure that chronic patients don't spend a lot of time in the hospital. We've brought it out in Bethakura. We were hoping that in this financial year we'll be able to involve more hospitals, but because of the national lockdown, we're not able to visit sites and so forth. One of the programs that we run, you know, when you talk innovation, you cannot run away from knowledge management. So we try to use a number of platforms to inculcate or to expose public servants to various public sector innovation concepts. And in the previous year, what we tried to do is to bring in design thinking skills into the public service. It's a fairly new program. We thought, let's see how they take it up. We had many technical clinics as part of the conference, where we brought in specialists just to give a high-level presentation of what design thinking is. So that work has been taken through into this financial year. We are running workshops. And the plan is we want to engage with NSG to have design thinking as one of their courses. DPS is currently reviewing the Batupili strategy. We want to bring that content into the Batupili strategy as well. I know there's a meeting this week with the team from DPSA to see how the Batupili strategy can be further revitalized. So we're hoping that design thinking, which simply means put your client first when you solve the problem. You'd agree with me, members and honorable member, chairperson, that most of the time as departments, we tend to come up with solutions without really engaging the beneficiary. So design thinking tries to change that mindset to say, put your client at the center before you even think about the solution. So we want to see how it will go, but we are very excited from the workshops that we've had already with attendance of almost 100 public service per session. The feedback has been very good. We will update the committee as part of reporting this year on developments in that regard. In the next slide, I will not talk to it a lot here. It moves to slide 9, Desiree. I've already indicated the replication program. Move to the next slide. The issue around us working with youth, we've run a number of hackathons, where youth would come up with solutions to address a particular service delivery challenges. And we had a number, I think, over 5 engagements in this financial year. I just want to give members an example of one, which is called Guardian Health. So it's data scientists. They use data analytics to look at maternity files. As women go for checkups and so forth, they collect that data, and they are able to predict whether this patient will need to go to theater or have a normal birth and so forth. So it improves the health care of pregnant women. It's something still new. It's not yet implemented. They are still sharing the idea, but we hope that through our engagements with Department of Health, such solutions that are coming from our youth will be able to use in the public service. The next slide, I will skip slide 11 and go to, I've already touched on slide 12, 13, when I was checking to the to to the tables. On slide 14, it just highlights, as I said before, why we failed to achieve two targets. I want to highlight that one of the biggest challenges that we have here, for instance, under research and development, we only have one researcher, a deputy director researcher, a researcher deputy director level. We only have one deputy director for development. So immediately, we used to have additional capacity through EU, but the funding came to an end end of March 2018. So capacity constraints actually are limiting us. In terms of replication, we have only one project manager who has to run with these two projects, and it takes a lot of juggling because to also support service delivery institutions like hospitals so those are the challenges. It's not an excuse, members. We're trying our best to make sure that these targets, because they are core to the mandate of the CPSI, are achieved moving forward. We would like to replicate in as many sites as possible. I want to give members that, for instance, in the financial year, we want to replicate an e-learning solution from a school, Sunward Park. But the cost of replicating that solution to one school is about 200K. With a budget of 30-odd million at CPSI for both compensation and goods and services, you will agree with me that we can only do so much. I mean, if we were to replicate in five schools, you're talking almost a million, and we don't have that kind of budget. That's why, at the moment, we end up replicating one or two sites. But it's a challenge that we have, but we hope through the review of the CPSI, some of these challenges will be attended to. Challenging as well because compensation budget has a ceiling, and there's not much that we can maneuver in our budget to accommodate growing, especially program to which is public sector innovation. On slide 15, which is the next slide, we have a staff turnover of about 6% at CPSI. Our vacancy rate, unfortunately, has increased compared to 2018-19. We're standing now at 13.5%. Because of the vacant posts that we have, the ED post, as we all know, it's still vacant since 2018. There's a review process that was reported to the committee. It's taking longer than expected, but we are making progress. We had a meeting with DPSA team on last week Saturday to try and finalize a report that will go to the minister in terms of charting forward. I must say, it's actually a miracle, I would say a miracle for us to have achieved the clean audit, because we are so thin in the ground. In supply chain, there are two people. If one is not there, you can't work. This week, the CFO is off sick. It's fortunate that it's not during reporting time to Treasury, because as it is now, we lost the Deputy Director of Finance. She's the only one who can do certain things, and you'll agree with me that it's a huge risk on the organization in terms of compliance, monthly reporting. If we fail to report, you know, submit month and reports through PAS to Treasury, I may end up going to stop because of non-compliance. So we are working on a very thin staff establishment, and it's actually very worrying that if you rely on one person to carry out certain tasks, if anything were to happen, she's in ICU or the whole man, I would not have, as an accounting officer, anyone that can step in, because she works with two level six staff that are not financially trained. They may be able to assist with payments, and they, but there are certain areas where, as it is now, we will not be able to comply if anything were to happen, contribute to the CFO. On the next slide, slide 17, in terms of people with disabilities, we're standing at 7.1%, and women in SMS, we are at 60%. And slide 18, I've already alluded to the vacant post of the ED. And on slide 19, some of the challenges that we have is in terms of ICT capacity. internal ICT capacity. What we're working on now, we are looking at getting support from a service provider, because we only have one ICT person for desktop support, to support projects where IT is needed and so forth. But we realize that it's actually very, we don't have a vacant post, by the way, for a second person in ICT. So we want to use a service provider to support him in maintaining the servers and other things. In terms of the future human resource plans, as it is now, until the review is done, we will not be able to have a future human resource plan until the review is finalized. In terms of the budget on slide 21, we spend 77% of our budget, which is low. I'd like to highlight that one of the reasons for under expenditure under goods and services is because of the vacancies, including the vacant executive director post, which is currently filled by internal capacity. So there is a lot of money that is left. Other program one posts are also vacant, adding to that. On the next slide 22, under goods and services, CPSR used to have offices in Centurion and we're paying office accommodation. Moving into DPSA, that 4.3 million was no longer used for office accommodation. The plan was to do some upgrading of infrastructure, tenant installation, because the movement to DPSA, we actually sacrificed some of our office space. For instance, we used to have a multimedia innovation center. We would bring in public servants to spend a day at CPSI with touch screens, you know, interactive screens and so forth, so that they can experience what innovation is. But with our movement there, then we lost that kind of capacity, office space. So it sort of led to a surplus in terms of under expenditure in terms of office accommodation. The movement as well to DPSA, up to July, we were going to CETA offices to access transversal systems, and that as well contributed to under expenditure. In the next slide, it's just indicating some of the minor savings that we had. For instance, the public service guide that we did it internally, so there was some cost saving, less travel and accommodation, because most of the projects that we're working with were based in Gauteng. And last year we didn't hold the workshop for awards finalists because we invited them to the conference. So that sort of led to under expenditure. We've also kept quite a lot in terms of our international programs. So there were savings there as well. I will go to slide 25. Where it shows, comparatively speaking, the expenditure for 2018-19 and 2029. As you can see, we spent 29 million, just over 29 million for the financial year. I'm not sure whether I'll be able to push on to the next slide, but I think it also, it's just a continuation of the previous slide in terms of showing the expenditure per line item in terms of goods and services, transfers and subsidies, capital assets, and financial assets. The next slide as well, that's an tax according to sub-program in terms of expenditure. Program one, as you can see, corporate services management had the lowest expenditure. And if you look at Program 2, which is the core mandate of the CPSI, the expenditure was between 82% and 93% per sub-program. I think that was the last slide, Chairperson. Thank you, members and Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Lydia. Honorable members, this is now open for discussion as well. Can I see hands from honorable members who wants to speak on this one? Honorable Gibby.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me welcome and appreciate the presentation by CPSI. It's really a job well done. Honorable Chair, I want to thank them for the initiative that they have taken to help people to not stand so long in queues when they are going to their visiting hospitals and so on. You know, in most cases, you find out that people are even losing their lives on those queues. So if this can really be speeded up to other provinces as well, it is going to assist a lot. Really, that one is very much appreciated. Now, there is this issue of them being always under a fear of if one person gets sick, then they will be having a problem. I'm not sure how do they think they can address that one, because I can just imagine if one gets sick and you feel that we'll be stuck if this person can get sick. I just want to get clarity on that one. And my next one were there any challenges regarding ongoing and new innovations due to ICT capacity remaining a challenge? When will the new memorandum of understanding be implemented with the department regarding shared services? And that is all, Honorable Chair. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kibi. I don't see any other hands from members. Okay. Over to you, CPI to respond to what Honorable Kibi has raised.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Kibi, for the comments made. We appreciate the feedback. Yes, we will engage with provinces regarding that innovation to assist as many as possible, hospitals as possible, to reduce queues. The issues about vacancies, Honorable Members, we are hopeful that following the review that Minister will approve in terms of way forward about the CPSI, we will be able to solve some of the challenges that we have in terms of vacancies. But as it is now, I don't think there's much that we can do to deal with that the risk that we're facing at the moment. But I'm hopeful that soon, with the engagement, that we will come to, because we really need to fill this critical post that are there to make sure that we comply with legislation and, you know, internal controls and all those things. So we do not like to see the CPSI going back to a qualified audit because we couldn't separate delegation of duties within the organization and so forth. We are really hopeful that we will be able to do that. What we're also trying to do, we are engaging with CETA to second their developers, you know, solution developers to CPSI. That's still work under progress. We tried at one stage to get a secondment from one department of a deputy director to come and assist for a certain period. But unfortunately, although the supervisor agreed, the teacher said, no, I need that person. So we've been trying there and there to deal with these issues. We've also looked, for instance, in HR, which has three posts. We thought one post is at level 8, so we thought we could change it and take it to a lower level so that maybe we can create another post to assist the IT guy, the IT person. But It's just ideas. We're just waiting for the green light from Minister to do that. We just pray and hope that nothing happens to those key people who their passwords to pass and so forth. But I'm really hopeful that we will. In terms of, I think if I heard you correctly, Honorable Kibi, the issue around ICT. ICT will always remain a challenge in terms of, especially procurement. The example that I gave you about the rollout of or replication of a solution from one school to two schools, we had to deviate from normal procurement process for us to be able to support just two schools. Because when you don't do that, you're expected to do an RFQ, get quotations, and it might not be the solution that you've worked with, like the Sunward Park solution that you want to replicate. So it's always very challenging. I think in the AG report, they mentioned the issue around PSC not procuring IT without CIT. It becomes a finding or, you know, a matter of concern when you do that. But the issue around ICT procurement is a challenge and a very a serious barrier to the innovation agenda. I mean, if we were to take up that Guardian Health solution where you use data to predict the care of a mother, how would we do it? If we were to procure it, we have to have a tender or issue an RFQ, and there's no guarantee that we will get that solution. So I think with the procurement bill, that's, I think it's still under construction or under review, it might assist to make sure that as government we're able to procure IT much easier without compromising, laws and other things. But it needs a special attention to make sure that we enable the uptake of these innovations from social entrepreneurs into the public sector, because the solutions are there, but in terms of taking them in, then it becomes a challenge. I thank you. I hope I've answered all the questions from Honorable Kiwi. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Lydia. You are also free to leave if you want, but if you want to stay on, you are also welcome to do so. Thank you very much once again.
Support DPSA and stay on.
Yeah, DPSA must stay on. Mascola, is the minister in now?
Yes, everything, she's in.
DPSA?
Yes, Honorable Chikunda.
Okay. Good morning, Honorable Chikunda.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. My apologies for joining late. We had to attend to an OECD international conference and we're participating, and the minister is attending cabinet. Our apologies. We take this session very important, where we're presenting our annual report, and our apologies for joining late, but we're here now. Thank you.
The Honorable Minister, apology accepted.
Chairperson, I was there.
I am there. We lost the DM.
I'm not lost, Chair. I think I've made my
comment. You have made your comment. Yeah, okay.
Because I'm not sure as to where we are in terms of the agenda, and that is why I couldn't say much, because I'm not very sure I've just joined.
Oh, you have just joined. We got a presentation from NSG and CPI. We now want you to brief the committee if there is anything you want to brief the committee on.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. First, maybe to express our excitement about the fact that all our entities that are under the portfolio of Public Service and Administration not only receive unqualified audit opinions, but actually received clean audit opinions. And for us, that is something that we are happy about. It doesn't come by itself. It takes some efforts put by all in the leadership and management, but of course in the political leadership as well, to ensure that we get that outcome. We are aware about the trading account, and we're briefed by the Auditor General about it, and we're taking measures to ensure that tomorrow we get that. What we see as not a challenge, but something that has to happen, is to maintain this important achievement so that it doesn't happen that come next time we're talking about some regression of some kind. We are aware about the issues that CPSI is raising about the positions, that if they're not filled, they may actually attract a serious finding from the Auditor General, and it's a matter that we are attending to, and they know why it has taken some delays on their side and our side as well. And that for us is important. We are therefore looking forward to yet another year of success. I must indicate, Chairperson, that just during this week, NSG is running yet another important groundbreaking program of politicians attending induction at the school, and we're happy about that. It's going to actually give them and give all of us a taste of something that has never happened, and probably to know as to how best to improve. This is a program that will have to be improved from time to time. And with the lockdown behind us, we are also aware of some of the causes that they initiated and they put on hold because of the lockdown, that they are again continuing. I've got to know about others, and somebody was just talking to say we're starting on March. I think they talk about the 30th. And they said, and I said, oh, okay, then it actually means that you continue with your work. So, yes, we are happy about that. And this actually talks to the very priority number one of our country, of our state, that of building a capable, capacitated, ethical, and developmental state, which is not just a small thing, which is an important issue. I attended some interviews yesterday. I may not talk about that, but I was very happy to hear that in a department that is not seen to be leading on that priority, but there were questions related to an ethical state, and I was very happy about that, because it means that everybody is recognizing the fact that it's not only for the public service portfolio, but it's for everybody in South Africa, to ensure that we are able to build a capable and ethical state and professional state. And then I think that is that. So yes, my take before we make our presentation is to say, even with the Department of Public Service and Administration, expect that we'll be talking about a clean audit, which is an unqualified audit without any findings from the Auditor General. So what we did our work, and we said, come Chapter 9 institution, assess, audit us, because we are sure of the work that we have done. One other excitement that we have, Chairperson, is on the auditing of PPEs as well, contracts and tenders and everything. And we've also been given a clean bill, and we are happy about that. So you're not going to find our names with contracts and everything, because we didn't do it, and we tried, despite the difficulties under the pandemic, but we still try to do things the right way. There are issues, and you will definitely know we're still engaging on the issue of the wage bill with our unions, and we wouldn't want to preempt the outcomes of such negotiations. They're at a very sensitive state, but we are trying our level best to have engagements with our labor unions on issues related to that and going forward. And I think that will be my comments, Chairperson, as we allow the DG to make the presentation. Again, I must apologize that we have joined a little bit late. This is one portfolio committee meeting that we normally do not want to miss, because we're actually accounting not only for what we have done, but also for the monies and the budget that was approved by Parliament last year. And we're saying this is how we spent the money that we collected, that was given to us from the people of South Africa. And we think it's an important, I think a very important one. Thank you very much. We allow the
Thank you, Honorable DM.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable DM. Is the CFO who is taking us through the presentation, dear?
The DG.
The DG. Okay. DG, come in.
I'm here, Chairperson. Good morning to the Chairperson, to the Honorable Members, Deputy Minister, and everybody who is in the meeting. With your permission, Chair, I'm not going to take you into detail in terms of our achievements in the previous quarter, but because I want to spend some time and give you an update in terms of progress on some of the key areas that the committee has been monitoring in the past. So I will take you through the annual report, and then at the end I'll just give an update in some of the key projects and work that is happening in that aspect. So this report covers the 2019-20 financial year. And just in terms of our introduction, our information has been audited, as the Auditor General indicated. We did receive a clean audit, or what is called an unqualified audit opinion, with no findings. And in terms of our presentation currently, we will cover achievements against the implementation of 2019-20 Annual Performance Plan, our financial performance, and our human resource information, performance information. How are human resource information? And as I indicated earlier on, I just want to touch on progress on some of the key issues that the committee has been asking for updates on a continuous basis. Just in terms of our performance information, we achieved 97% of our targets. One target was not achieved, which accounts for 3%. And this target that has not been achieved is under the Program 2 Policy Development Research and Analysis. It was partially achieved, but because of the language of achieved or not, we registered it as not achieved. This is just a picture of the, we have six programs. The first program, admin, had about six targets. They were all achieved. The second program, policy, had about eight targets. Seven were achieved. The third program, public service, employment, and conditions of service, had seven targets, and seven were achieved. The government chief information officer had four programs, and the four were achieved. Service delivery support had six programs, and the six were achieved. Governance of public administration had four programs and four were achieved. That gives us a total of 35 targets, so not programs, and 34 achieved and one not achieved. In terms of these actual targets, I did indicate that my intention is not to go into detail on them, but I will highlight a few issues in relation to them. I think the issues that relate to financial statements have been raised already by AG. The department has complied. We also complied to the broad-based leg economic empowerment status. There's reporting that we must do there, and we've done the reporting, and we've submitted all our quarterly reports, because as part of in-year reporting, we have quarterly reports that must be submitted. And we've also rolled out our internal audit and risk management plan as a department, and our compliance to, we monitor on a quarterly basis and report on our compliance to financial, human resources, and labor relations prescripts, and our reports on bilateral and multilateral agreements. Program 2 had 8 targets. One target had to do with the Office on Standards, which required the establishment of the office. As you know, the office has been established, it's in the office of the DG, and so all the targets related to that office were achieved. And I think there's I want to highlight the target that has been not been achieved in respect to this portfolio. I think the target that has not been achieved is the one that relates to there was a need for consultation in respect to the draft white paper for transformation and modernization of the public service. The consultations could not be done within the financial year due to the fact that it took longer, due to the fact that the draft white paper was submitted at the later part of the financial year to the minister. So the approval processes of the white paper could not be completed, and then consultations take place within the financial year. I am speaking as part of the updates. I'm just giving an update in respect to this matter, which is now coming through in line with the single public administration approach. In terms of this program, which is program 3, what I think we want to highlight here is that I think there's issues generally about vacancies in the public service, and that we are monitoring the department. So we monitor our own, but also we monitor the vacancies in the public service. So that information is just to show you the tracking of the vacancy rate in the public service on an annual basis. And we also revised the SMS PMTS processes as a department. We also developed our report on the graduate recruitment scheme framework, and we have publicized this report. And we also have some statistics. I think we briefed the committee on this in terms of the report, the annual report on the appointment of persons into the development programs within the public service. We did, I remember, early in the financial year, we did a detailed report to the committee in respect to this matter. I think during June, during youth month, we did that report. Then there's the one other issue relates to the disciplinary cases and precautionary suspensions, and this is a matter that has been a matter of attention to the committee. And as part of the update, I will give an update in relation to the work that we are doing currently. Those are the statistics that we have and the five-year average, a five-year look into this matter. The issues around the compliance, so we will indicate in detail mechanisms that we are putting in place in respect to this particular area. Now, coming to Program 4, which relates to ICT-related matters, here, I think what we're highlighting is that the public service information and security standards and the revised corporate governance ICT frameworks were submitted. This is work in progress. There's engagements and consultations that we're doing with the various clusters to ensure that these become policies that go through approval processes. So we are continuing with this work in the current term. In the current financial year. On ICT expenditure, we're just giving you a picture there in relation to ICT expenditure and government. We think that there is not a sufficient integration, and ICT expenditure is one of the areas of wastage in the public service that is part of the areas that we are monitoring at the cluster level. There's lots of integration that needs to be done in respect to this area, and there's a number of engagements taking this idea forward. In terms of service delivery, our operations management framework, we are working with departments in terms of rolling it out to support departments with the business processes, especially those departments with interfacing responsibilities with members of the public. Then the other area I want to highlight here relates to some of the work that we're doing with the SDIPs, which is really about service delivery monitoring, working with the provinces and national departments. The Batopile, the work that is being done in context to Batopile, the standards by all national and provincial departments and the monitoring, that's some of the information that's coming out of the monitoring that we are doing and the interventions or partnerships that we have with the departments. I want to pass Chairperson and come to this one, the governance one. Here, I think that there's a number of issues. One of them had to do with the issue of establishing the head of national administration in the public service. This is a matter getting attention. We have presented to a cabinet committee as well on this particular matter in the current term. So it's work that's ongoing. Guidelines to support implementation of the revised determination of other remunerative work was developed. The report on the adherence of by public service employees in national and provincial departments to the directives on conducting business with the organs of the state. Again, we are giving further information on updates in relation to this one. This is some of the data in relation to the compliance rate for declarations by officials covering this period. I think we're comparing here three years, and I think at the correct time when the committee wishes, we can brief them again in respect to the current to the latest declarations disclosures that have been done as the process has been finalized currently. Just in terms of human resources, what I would like to highlight in terms of human resources is just if you look at these graphs, you'd see the total numbers of employees per race in the department, the equity matters, as of 31st March 2020, and the female representation at SMS, which was at the time of reporting, which was at 51% and male and 49%. I know now that we're at 50-50% with the latest appointments that we've made. This is a target that is fluctuating a lot because of the appointments and resignations that have taken place in an organization. Persons living with disability, we are at 3% at the time. And in terms of the vacancy rate, we were at, I can't see this rate. I think I'm going to go to the next slide. Somewhere I saw the vacancy rate was returned. I think it was 13.5. Oh, but Linda, please, you can come and help me. I don't have my glasses. I don't see this red, this slide in red. Apologies, Chairperson.
Is that 15%?
Oh, it's at 15, okay. The high vacancy rate is a result of filling of posts being put on hold until the revised structure has been approved. So now the revised structure was approved. In the current financial year, we are rolling out the implementation of the structure. A post approval of the macro organizational structure by Minister in December, the department has developed a recruitment plan. Yes, we have a recruitment plan that we are monitoring. We are making a significant progress. Treasury in August gave us approval in terms of the budget book. Therefore, it means going into the next financial year, we'll arrange accordingly. We will align our budget in line with the new programs in terms of the new structure and for our reporting purposes. But I think the significance of that is also that while the macro structure was approved by the minister and we implemented it with effect from the 1st of April. The micro component of the structure, we've been working on the old micro component of the structure because the micro structure, which is the from levels of deputy directors and below, requires more engagement internally with a labor forum, within with the bargaining council, the departmental bargaining council, and other stakeholders in the department. But I think by end of September, we did get at least an agreement with Labour in regarding to the way forward, and submissions and approvals were received from the minister in October. So now we're also focusing on rolling out the new structure and filling vacancies, I mean the microstructure and filling vacancies. There is significant progress made in respect to the SMS level, and we are ensuring that we keep to the target of 50% and beyond. Just in respect to now, Chair, I'm moving to the last part of my presentation, and I'm asked the CFO to speak about the financial aspect. I just wanted to spend some time to update the committee on some of the projects that you've been tracking and concerned about, the substantive issues that we have to deal with. The first one relates to discipline management. We have started a project. We are implementing a project that focused on addressing precautionary suspensions, which are 12 months and longer in the system. And a minister got involved in terms of escalating the matters to the executive authorities. So we moved away from the traditional writing letters and waiting for the executive authorities and the DGs to respond, but now have minister, we convene one-on-ones. Minister is one-on-ones with the executive authorities affected, and their DGs are also part of the meetings. So far, minister has had meetings with the premiers of Northwest Province, KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape and Free State, as well as Minister of Higher Education, Science and Innovation, and Minister of Justice and Correctional Services. What we do as the department is also we do workshops with these provinces. We've done a workshop with the Northwest. We spent 2 days in Northwest just working through the people responsible in the province for discipline management, reminding them of the prescripts, and also rolling out the new tool that we are using for gathering information. We've done so with KwaZulu-Natal as well, Mpumalanga and Free State, as well as the Department of Correctional Services. We have a workshop that is due with Northern Cape as well as the security cluster in terms of national departments. At the end of each workshop, cases are updated using the newly developed tool, data capturing tool, and these are then reflected in the report submitted to MPSA and the relevant executive authorities. So the other agreements that we have is that whilst the premier must actively monitor at a provincial level their cases, they must build a system of monitoring, but also from our part nationally, the reports that we send to the minister, because we send reports to the minister on a quarterly basis, monitoring reports, those will also be shared with the on a monthly basis, departments are required to update the data capturing tool so that cases that have been completed are moved out of the system. Cases that are still ongoing are kept in the system, but we are able to flex system cases that are in the system for a longer time and engage with the provinces. Also, we are developing a guide on discipline management. I know that we committed to Minister that this guide is going to be available within the current quarter, which is by end of December. We'll have the guide published, and we're working around the clock to deliver on that. And the guide is really going to assist or to remind people about the norms and standards involved in discipline management. We are consulting with the draft that we are consulting on, and we are also gaining information as we go to the different provinces and departments. We have a case backlog specialist appointed that is working with these departments that are struggling to finalize their disciplinary cases within 90 days and support them to develop strategy and plans to address the backlogs. In terms of lifestyle audits, as a second project we are working on, a framework for implementing lifestyle audits in the public service was approved with a strategy and draft guidelines and draft guides developed. The draft strategy and guide is aligned to our national strategy for lifestyle audits, which identifies a role for the GPSA in relation to policy development and monitoring. In June 2020, we had engagements with representatives from the Financial Intelligence Center, National Treasury, Auditor General, SIU, NPA, and SAPS to further discuss the frameworks and the mechanics of how we would implement the lifestyle of on the infrastructure that's currently available in law enforcement and in these institutions. And also to explore support for SAPS and the NPA to conduct investigations and to institute prosecutions. All this information was shared with the group. There was also a meeting of the ministers, relevant ministers within the security cluster with MPSA as well, discussing similar matters. We have a draft guide that we have taken through all our ethics officers for input, as well as our principals, the principals of the anti-corruption task team within the security cluster. We've also had discussions with the state security agency to link how we link lifestyle audits to the continuous vetting that are being done for some categories of public servants. We also presented to the government's state capacity and institutional development cluster, which is constituted by DGs and HODs or representatives, their representatives from all the provinces and national departments. We will publish the guide within the current financial year, and with the ethics officers in departments, thereafter having to start the process of conducting lifestyle, supported by the DPSA and using the e-disclosure system as the main source of information. Where cases are complicated and require further information, law enforcement agencies will be involved, but the first stage will involve our ethics officers. We are anticipating that a full rollout of the actual audits will take place during the 21-22 financial year. The third aspect I want to speak about is officials doing business with the state as a third project. Basically here to assist national and provincial departments as well as local government to enforce a prohibition on public service employees conducting business with the state. On 22 July 2020, the Ministers of Police, Justice and Correctional Services and Minister for Public Service and Administration met and agreed to establish a multi-departmental team. This team is coordinated by Director Generals of the respective ministries and are tasked to ensure that allegations regarding employees possibly conducting business with the state are investigated and those found guilty are prosecuted. In August, the DGs met and approved an MOU which highlights the roles and responsibilities, and it was accompanied by a plan of action focusing on 10 priority cases and on dealing with a list of the 1,539 public service employees who were identified through the systems that we're using to be possibly conducting business with the state. The DPSA, in the same month, we trained with SAPS, we trained our ethics officers so that they can be able to assess these allegations, collect sufficient data, and to draft affidavits where transgressions of the prohibitions were detected and to support the HODs in instituting disciplinary steps when necessary. We continued on a monthly basis to identify employees possibly conducting business with the state so that departments can investigate, draft affidavits, and hand confirmed cases to SAPS for investigation. Out of the 1,539 cases that were reported and handed over to reported as employees possibly doing business with the state, handed over for investigations to SAPS, 579 employees are now confirmed to be conducting business with the state as follows: National Department 157, Eastern Cape 43, Free State 35, Gauteng 42, KwaZulu-Natal 137, Limpopo 38, Mpumalanga 52, Northwest 9, Northern Cape 43, Western Cape 23. The implicated departments with 579 employees are preparing the affidavits in order for SAPS to register investigations. The DGs or HODs of those departments have been made aware and they are aware what is required of them. SAPS is in advanced stages of finalizing the investigations into their own cases and found that out of the 78 cases of such members possibly conducting business with the state, 49 were found to be active directors of companies registered at CIPC. Disciplinary processes against these members are in different stages, with 7 criminal cases and 1 criminal inquiry registered at this stage. The last area I would like to give an update on, I think just on the employees doing business with the state, maybe just to indicate to the committee as well that we are in engagements with the executive director for SIU, and we've written formally to him because we are asking to have access to the database of the investigations that they've done on PPE as well as other investigations that involve government employees, so that the information, we can be able to get that information and check whether the government departments have raised cases of disciplinary against the employees, and indeed whether there is criminal cases that are continuing against the employees in line with the SIU processes. Just on the Central Public Administration, which is the last area I would like to brief before I hand over to the CFO, I think here what is important is, I think at the right time a briefing will be done to the Portfolio Committee on this matter. But in fact, I know that there was a request from the Portfolio Committee for a briefing around the amendments, the legislative amendments, so we should be able to provide that information in detail. Just to indicate for now that the same public administration is an issue that comes from quite some time ago, and there's been start and stops, but finally there was a PEM Act enacted in 2014. And what we are doing currently is we are looking at the amendments that need to be effected to the PEM Act to effect the some aspects of the Single Public Administration. There's two aspects. There's aspects of regulations, because the PEM Act, for it to be implemented, certain sections to cover entire public administration, not just public service as in the responsibility of DPSA, but entire public service, public administration, including the areas that are under the control of including local government in particular. So there is a regulation that needs to be approved. The process of the regulation is completed from our side. We're waiting for concurrence by me. That's just one part of it. So once you have that concurrence and the regulations are effected, you be able to talk about employees doing, and maybe at some stage is also focusing on SOC once data is integrated on SOC, on employees within our SOC portfolios and other public entities, as an example. But there's a number of areas that where once those regulations are enacted, you'll be able to include the other spheres. The second area is legislation amendments. So what we have done currently has been to go to Cabinet Committee after going through some consultations on some of the areas that require legislative amendments. And I will not go into detail in this, Chairperson, because this is information that we will come back to the committee to present in detail, but it's just to assure the committee that there's been some work that has been done in this area. In terms of the PAMA amendments, some of the areas we are requesting relate to transfers of employees, just to ensure that there's a smooth transfer and secondment of employees from the different spheres, as well as from the different arms of government. And also the issues around the National School of Government remaining the National Department in situation, and also having uniform standards, norms and standards across government. Currently, you have different norms and standards in local government and in SOCs compared to national and provincial governments. Removal of unjustifiable disparities on remuneration and conditions of service in the public service, government and public entities. And then there's some other technical amendments that we must do. In terms of the Public Service Act, the areas that we want to amend, also to effect some of the proposals from the NDP relate to a policy area around appointments and career incidents of heads of departments. So as part of strengthening the political administrative system, how the career incidents of heads of departments are managed and how the appointments of heads of departments is managed is one of those areas. Recovery of overpaid salaries and benefits, devolution of administrative powers to heads of departments, the head of the public administration, which is the issue around the role of the Director General in the Office of the President in dealing with career incidents and other matters. So these are some of the areas, Chairperson. I won't go into detail because we will get appropriate time to do that and brief the committee on the matters. This slide is just to show you some of the milestones. This work has gone through up until the level of the Cabinet Committee. And there's now consultations that we must take through the SALGA system, NETLEC, Department DCOG, Department of Cooperative Governance, public and other stakeholders. Those will unfold. We are hoping that we will have by 30th of June at least a draft bill that will have to go through a draft proposal, that is a bill to go through the parliamentary processes. We have a team that's working on this. Chairperson, with your permission, if I may just request the CFO to quickly take the committee through the financial aspects of the financial aid performance. CFO?
Thank you, Yolusa. The CFO may come in.
Thank you, DG. Good morning. Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members, I'm just going to quickly take you through the Honorable Members' the financial status as at the end of the financial year as audited. Our budget as a department, excluding the entities in terms of that slide, was 488 million. And out of that, the actual expenditure was at the end of 31st March was 450 million, which is 92% of the budget spent. About 38 million is the one that has been surrendered to National Treasury. if you look at out of the top of that total is the breakdown of the expenditure per program. I think main understanding under program one relates to a saving of about 6 million on office accommodation that we pay to Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. Since when we had not yet signed the lease agreement, there was some problem in terms of correctly projecting the budget on that, but subsequent to that, we've already signed a lease agreement with DPWI, and we will be able to deal with that savings that we incurred and see where we move it to. Part of the common denominator, the Honorable Chair, in all the programs, it's what has been highlighted earlier on by both AG as well as the Director General, the vacant posts that were not filled because of the fact that we're going through a process of structuring the department. Now we are almost done with the process and we can go ahead and fill most of our posts. So the common denominator in terms of all the programs, understanding would be that. But in program one of the issues also around the FITA invoices that normally are delayed at the end of the year that we could not pay, that would overlap obviously in the new financial year. I think the other program just to deal with is program number three, which is public service employment and conditions of services. The major understanding there is under government employee housing scheme, which is money that has been reinvested for employee housing scheme. The lower part chain of the table indicates the transfers that we have made to the three departments that two of them have already presented. the Center for Public Service Innovation, their budget was 38.4 million, which we transferred on. We're reporting the actual transfer, not the expenditure. The expenditure, I'm sure they've already dealt with in their presentation. National School of Government, their expenditure was 187 million, which we transferred and sent to them. And Public Service Commission, that is coming later on, their budget was 278, and they will indicate to honorable members how they spent their budget. All in all, the budget, final budget for the vote was 504, and that for the entity, for the entities was 504, which 100% of that has been transferred. In the next slide, Honorable Chair, the next slide, DG. In the next slide, we show you, this is where you see the clear picture of how the spending took place. we indicating the expenditure in terms of the economic classification. Compensation of employees, final budget was 303 million, and 219 million was actually spent, which is 95% of the budget spent, and I've highlighted the issue of some of the vacant posts that were funded and not fit. But let's also note, Chair, that during the adjustment, I estimate an amount of over 10 million from compensation of employees was also taken away by National Treasury. Otherwise, then the understanding would be a bit huge. So that does not reflect the status of unfunded posts, funded posts that were not filled. That 30 million does not actually reflect that, because part of the money was actually surrendered. Goods and services, out of 175 million, we have spent 151 million, which converts to 86.5%. I've already highlighted some of the reasons around GHS, the DPWI, as well as also the CETA invoices. Transfers and subsidies, basically, is mainly the transfers that we have made to the three entities or the three departments that are also in this meeting. Payments for capital assets, that is basically just the capital asset budget. We have spent 71% of that. The next slide, DG. This Chair, I just want to deal with it because I've already indicated the reasons for understanding and all this. I just want to indicate on the other information, the 30 days payments, we've actually paid all our suppliers within the prescribed 30 days period. In fact, in terms of our management report from AG, our average payment day is between 10 and 11 days. So it's even reduced. It's not actually sticking to the 30 days. It's even lesser than 30 days. We did not incur unauthorized expenditure, as the AG has confirmed earlier on. Fruitless expenditure, we indicating that there was no fruitless and wasteful expenditure in during the 2019-2020 financial year. But let me also just explain one matter that the AG has raised in that in the fruitless expenditure. They indicated that was an amount of 8,000 that was recorded as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I want to indicate to Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members that 8,000 was actually recovered during the year. So in terms of our closing balance in the financial statements, there's no fruitless and wasteful expenditure. How it was recovered, it was 5,000 that was as a result of somebody who missed a flight. But we realized that the service provider, which is the travel agent, had captured the information of that individual who missed a flight only. So the service provider refunded the department the 5,000 that was charged to the department. And the 3,000, which makes up 8,000, was as a result of the late cancellation of a shuttle service. somewhere abroad. One of our officials went abroad, and he cancelled the shuttle late. And when he came back, this was recorded as fruitless expenditure. We sat down with the official, and he actually accepted. He took the responsibility, and we recovered the money from the official, the entire 3,000. So all in all, we don't have any fruitless expenditure. The 8,000 was recovered. And there was no irregular or unauthorized expenditure that was incurred during the year, as AHG has reported. And I think lastly, Chair, I don't know, I actually joined the meeting, I think, 14 minutes later. I don't know whether the AHG would have also indicated that they were also requested to audit the COVID-19 related expenditure, even though it fell under 2020-21 financial year. And they actually audited all of our COVID-19 expenditure, and that brings me to the end of my presentation, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. That report is also now open for discussion. Can I see hands from Honorable Members want to speak on this matter? I see Honorable Lesoma followed by Honorable Clark. Honorable Lesoma followed by Honorable Clark. Lesoma. Am I muted, Honorable Lesoma?
We can still hear you, Chair. We can hear you.
I don't know what's wrong with Honorable Lesoma. Not responding.
Maybe, Chair, let's take Honorable Clark and
Honorable Clark, come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just ask, in terms of state employers doing business with the state, last year we were going to get a presentation from the SAPS regarding this matter, and twice it was cancelled, Chairperson. Can I ask, when do we expect to get that presentation? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Clark. Honorable Lesoma. There's a network problem with Honorable Lesoma. Can we get the response to the question Honorable Clark has asked?
Chairperson, I don't know. I'm not aware of that, but I suppose the committee would have to activate an invite with SAPS, and we will certainly, as the department, attend, and once invited, that would be my understanding. If the committee needs to have SAPS to come and present, then the committee would have to invite SAPS.
Honorable Soma, come in now. Honorable Soma.
Sir, can I quickly just respond to Honorable Clark?
Take the platform, Mr. Paul.
Yes, sir. Just to say, we note her comments on SAP presentation, which was supposed to have taken place in the previous quarter. We will respond to the group on the site, Chair, for the committee
We note your comments. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mastole. Honorable Soma says she's unable to hear. What is the situation like now, Honorable Soma?
She has logged out now. I think she will soon log in again. I think her questions can be also changed maybe after a PPSC chair.
Okay. Okay, Mastole, thank you very much. Let me thank the department, first of all. Thank you, Honorable DM. Thank you to all who presented before the committee. And now I invite the Public Service Commission. Welcome, Advocate Sizani.
So you want us to go through?
Yes, okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, members of the Portfolio Committee. I'm accompanied by my the Acting Director General, and my Acting Director General is also accompanied by the Chief Financial Officer. I just want to explain that I have an acting director general. As members know, our director general was still going through a disciplinary process, which was handled by Minister Mthunu. That disciplinary process is now in its final stages, so it has gone through. So he's going through that process. So we don't have a full-time director general. But the process of discipline is gone through. It's in its final processes. So I just wanted members to rest assured that has taken place and it has happened and it is being finalized now. Thank you. Beyond that, Mr. Chairperson, I would ask my Director General, Ms. Matenjwa Irene, to actually take the committee through the few things that we just want to tell you this morning.
Thank you, Advocate. Can Ms. Matenjwa come in?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and good afternoon to the Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Afternoon to Honorable DM, Chairperson of the Public Service Commission and colleagues. I will be taking you through the presentation. As the Chairperson of the PSC indicated, my name is Irene Matenjwa, and I'll be assisted by Mr. Zweli Momeka, our Chief Financial Officer. So I'll do the overall first, and then he will take us through the finances, and I'll finish off with the performance information. Perhaps if we can move to slide number four, there are two key issues, Honorable Chairperson, that we'll touch on for today's presentation. Firstly, is the issue relating to progress on implementation of the recommendations contained in the budget report, vote 10 of 2019-20 financial year, and obviously then we'll touch on the annual report. In respect of the first, the recommendation reads that the PSC should continue monitoring and evaluating government on the constitutional values and principles in the public sector. The PSC should, after having tabled the report to Parliament, publish the results on the state of the public service with regard to adherence to the CVTs, to the members of the public by utilizing platforms such as media conferences and social media as a way of popularizing its work. Now, in respect of the Chairperson, I need to report to say that the monitoring and evaluation of the CVP is the CVP refers to the constitutional values and principle, is an annual program of the PSC, and in this financial year as well, we will be continuing to conduct evaluations in respect of that area of work. But one thing that is very important that I need to mention is that overall, if you look at the work of the Public Service Commission, everything that we do really hinges on Section 1954 of the Constitution. If I have to give an example, the area of work that we do around leadership and management practices, be it a research on HR practices, recruitment, performance management, and so on, or an investigation, all of that actually seeks to express on the principle of good human resource management. So the same applies to all the other areas of work. And having done these evaluations, we tap on the other initiatives, as I've just indicated now, for the work of the Public Service Commission and culminating into the State of the Public Service Report. And we popularize that work through engagement presentations, and we publicize it through media as well as engaging with departments throughout. And in this financial year, we're just indicating there how many articles we have published specifically on this one, but also on what we call the quarterly publication of the Public Service Commission, the PAS, where we report regularly around this matter. Chairperson, I also just need to indicate that in relation to the state of the public service, we held a webinar on the 1st of October where we engaged extensively with various stakeholders. I know that we were supposed to have engaged with the committee on the 11th. It was postponed and will be guided further by the committee when we should table that state of the public service. I would like to proceed to slide 7. Which gives now the summary of performance on the annual report. If you look at that slide, the PSC has achieved 100% of its targets for 2019-2020. Overall, we had 21 targets, and all of them have been truly achieved. We had also additional outputs that PSC engaged on during the year. Normally, these are things that come out of PSC's own accord, or it would be requests from stakeholders that we undertake, and those have been achieved, all of them. Chairperson, at this point, if you allow me to slide 8, I would like to give to the CFO so that he can take us through the finances as requested earlier on, and then I will come back on the performance information. Mr. Momek.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of Parliament. Let me recognize the Deputy Minister, the Chairperson of Public Service Commission, the DGs that are around, ladies and gentlemen. I will quickly take you through to the summaries of our financials, noting that a detailed annual report that contains financial statements has also been prepared. From the budget of 2019-2020 financial year of 278 million, PSC was able to spend 275 million to the nearest, which represents around about 99% of the budget, with an underspending of around about 1%. This translates to 3.7 million that was underspent. And the reasons for underspending are basically contained on the next slide. As a result of, maybe let me start by indicating that from that underspending, it is quite clear that the majority of it, significant part of it is an underspending on our operational costs. We were quite we budgeted with precision when it comes to compensation of employees, even though we did the same on goods and services operational costs, we could not have the last leg of the orders delivered due to the complications that were created by COVID-19 in the East, the supply chain goods and service goods were delayed in China. So the video conferencing that we were busy recapitalizing was procured by the service provider from China, and it could not then reach our shore before the end of the financial. And therefore, we could not pay the 2.3 million that we had budgeted to pay. There was also another delay from other service providers who could not provide us with the invoices. And that is the reason why we have an understanding that has been indicated of 3.9 million. I wish to indicate that we continue to operate in a fiscally constrained environment where we know that the fiscal envelope is quite tight. Having said that, let me indicate that the Public Service Commission, during this financial year under review, was able to pay its suppliers and creditors within 7 days after receiving the invoices. We think that it is important for us to do this so that we do not cripple our the SMEs as well as the businesses that continue to provide employment to South Africans. Going to the next slide. I will just give highlights on this expenditure as per the program structure of the department. You can see members on the extreme right, that is the percentage of underspending. We wish to report that we did not overspend the budget. And even though there is minor underspending on the extreme right of the budget, you could see that clearly we have worked very hard to make sure that the resources that were available were properly utilized. The underspending is clearly shown on video conferencing under Program 1 administration of that 2.84 million. All other forms of underspending are really closer to the 100% budget. Therefore, I will go to the next slide, which is the same presentation of what I've just shown in the previous slide, but it's according to item classification and goods and services. That is where there is a huge underspending. I wish to indicate that the red figure that you are seeing there, 271, these are the financial assets, the write-offs that we had to do, debtors that the staff could not pay. And these are for people that have passed on, so we had to quickly look at our books and make sure that our books are in order. They were properly audited and they followed all due processes. This slide seeks to basically indicate that for the first time in the past 5 financial years, we have received a clean audit. Throughout the past 4 financial years, we have been getting an unqualified audit with findings. And now we did away with those findings. This slide basically seeks to give a history of 5 years of all these findings that we had that were affecting the audit report. The ones that are on the extreme right, that is per the indicator, you will see throughout that we do not have findings, which basically seeks to support and indicate that we indeed obtained a clean audit. We gave that slide so that we can show to the honorable members that there's a lot of good work that has been done. Systems are put in place just to make sure that our systems, our reporting is accurate as per the regulations. But this seeks to basically indicate that from the first graph on top, it's exactly what I've just indicated. And below, we are showing you the second bullet, the irregular expenditure, as it was indicated historically. I wish to emphasize what the AG has indicated, that the procurements that were procured during the financial year under review, none of it were declared irregular. These are irregular expenditures that are historical, and we continue to pay those contracts, but in no time they will be they will vanish. We have intensified our system and to make sure that we do not incur irregular expenditure. I will hand over back to the AG, to the acting DG. Thank you.
Thank you. DG, come in.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Momega. Honorable Chairperson, we'll proceed now with the details of our performance information. And as we go to slide 17, you will see that we're presenting on Program 1 of the Public Service Commission on slide 17. So basically, these are the indicators that we had for Program 1. On this slide, we're showing really issues relating to annual performance plan, the audit opinion, and the payment of suppliers, all of which have been met. And as we proceed to the second slide of administration again, you will see that here we had indicators relating to the interim financial statements, the prior Section 15 notice, a percentage of BBE suppliers, as well as risk management reports. All of those indicators and their targets throughout the year, they've been duly met. So that program, as indicated, it has achieved all its targets. We can move now to slide number 19. So these are some of the additional items that we really want to bring to the portfolio committee, indicating how the PSC has done in terms of vacancy rate. We have remained within the norm, 7%. In terms of women, we are at 50%. Disability, we are at 1.96%. We are working very hard here. And I guess the entire of the public service is really struggling in this area. And therefore, at the point when we reach the 2% and then the person moves to another department, but we are trying to work very hard there. As we move on, we also had about 13 human resource management and development policies reviewed during the period under review. We've also streamlined some of the functions, particularly in the HR, where a post of a DDG was abolished, and therefore we had two chief directors in that area of work. The PSC has also achieved 100% submission rate in terms of performance agreement, and those are eligible for performance appraisals. They were also assessed during the year under review. And one key thing that the CFO has also indicated is the issue of video conferencing. We have been doing this for the past 3-4 years, where in terms of liaising and communicating within the Public Service Commission with our colleagues in the provinces to limit traveling and so on, we are on the video conferencing system. But also, we do also invite our stakeholders before the COVID came into the picture, where we'll engage with them remotely and so on. As we move on, Chairperson, to the next program, this is the leadership and management practice. On this slide, we are showing two indicators that has to do with the work that we do around grievances. The first one is a percentage of grievances of employees on salary level 1 to 2 that are finalized within 30 working days from date of receipt of relevant information. On this one, the target was exceeded. As you can see, we had a total of 806 grievances across. 725 of them were for employees at level that level below the level up until 12, and 725 of them they were finalized. 725 were for that level. My apologies. And of the 725, 549 were concluded within the period, and therefore we have achieved the 84%. As we move on, we have got the second indicator on grievances of SMS members finalized within 45 working days from receipt of relevant information. Again, our APP target was 80%, and 92% has been achieved. So 81 cases were from SMS members
and of those 61, which is 75, were concluded, and 56 of those 92% were concluded within 45 days. I just need to indicate in this light to say that the reason for some of the grievances that are not finalized, it relates firstly to capacity issues within the commission in terms of the number of officials that we have to investigate grievances, but also when officials lodge their grievances with the PSC and they don't give us enough information for us to commence with the investigation. And in some instances, you find that an official has been booked, picked off. We need to respect those kind of instances where we cannot push to get information and finalize the grievances. Also, there is complexity in terms of the cases that involve DGs and EAs, where sometimes it will be a little bit difficult to get access to meet with them, to interview them and obtain as much information as possible. As we move on to the next slide, still on the leadership and management practices, this slide basically shows the trends analysis in terms of our management of grievances over the past 5 years. And you can see that in 2019-2020, there has been a number of grievances has really gone up. And it has significantly increased compared to the other years. And this is as a result of firstly, our public servants are becoming more aware of their rights and their raising. They're more even confident of raising their grievances. But also what happens is that the PSC, when it concludes its reports on and development, we take that kind of work and we, on our advocacy, and engage with public servants, and people become more aware. And more especially if there has been an instance where an official has lodged a grievance that has to do, just as an example, acting payment that it has been ruled in favor of the official. Therefore, other people find confidence to raise those kind of grievances, and which makes the number to go up. As we move on, Honorable Chairperson, we're still with the same program. On this slide, we had a number of indicators on grievance reports, grievance communique, on how we manage grievances, where we engage with departments, but also we had research reports on strategic human resource and leadership management. All those reports were produced on time and they were approved. You can see that on the bottom of that slide, we were supposed to do two reports, and an extra report was also produced. Those relate to the guide on EA, HOD. I'll talk more about that, a report on contract management, contract appointments rather in the public service, and also on performance of selected departments. So as we move on to the next slide, we're just giving, and I'll present at a bit of high level without necessarily going through each and every bullet. These are the additional outputs that were done in this branch. During the incoming of the sixth administration, the PSC participated in the induction of executive authorities. We developed a guide, which we called EA Guide, where we engaged both with members, EAs and HODs, to take them through on a number of issues. Amongst others, it was the issue of role clarification on the level of EAs and HODs, but also guiding them in terms of the do's and the don'ts when they are in office, and really reflecting on some of the experiences as public service commission that we have seen in the public service that have led to some political administrative challenges, interface challenges at that level. But also the guide touched on issues relating to management of recruitment and selection, particularly for those that are appointed in the offices of EAs, managing ethics, the role of EAs in labor relations, and so on. Also, I need to indicate, if you look at the last bullet, that the PSC engaged with various stakeholders on employment equity implementation. implementation challenges and solutions in the public service at the Commission for Employment Equity Strategic Partner Symposium. Here, the PSC also shared its experiences. Basically, this is a Department of Labor platform where we are all able to look at practices comparing how the private sector and the public sector is doing in terms of these areas of work. And the PSC also gets an opportunity to share some of its experiences and observations in the public service. And what we picked up particularly is the issue around disability and the fact that the private sector was creating a more of a conducive environment in terms of disability for those that are disabled as opposed to the public service. But generally, in terms of all of these issues, we find the public service to be doing far much better than the private sector. As we move on, Chairperson, also I just need to touch on a few of the issues again relating to additional outputs. There was a roundtable that we convened with national and provincial departments on the extent and nature of contract appointments in the public service. We had an engagement just to alert officials of what would be some of the challenges and the expectation and what are the prescriptive things around the appointment of those on contract positions. We also had advocacy sessions on grievance rules and engagement sessions and workshops on topical labor relations issues with several departments. And it's out of this kind of area of work where people are becoming even more aware, or rather public servants are becoming even more aware of the issues and when to raise their grievances. Chairperson, there is a matter that is really worrying the public service, the Public Service Commission. That is the pension payouts of public servants. We are picking up a trend where in many of these departments, and this we are picking up by officials who would come to the Public Service Commission and say, I've left the public service and my pension is not being processed. And as a matter of fact, we are providing assistance to those individuals. But in addition to just being reactive, we are working very closely with the GPA. We have had a number of discussions, and we have now a straight line to the CEO of GPA, so that when we get this kind of issues, we are able to resolve them immediately. We are also engaging with those departments that are affected, particularly their HR units, to ensure that documents are actually submitted to GPA even before a person leaves or immediately when they leave, so that the pensions can be processed immediately. Some of the stories really coming out, they worry the Public Service Commission, where you would find that at the time of submitting the documents, there are certain things that the department would claim not to have or GPA not received. Therefore, the officials sitting at home long after they have retired and their monies are not paid out. So it's an area of work where the PSC is really putting a spotlight and assisting those that find difficulty in terms of payment of their pensions. Chairperson, as we move on again, just on the impact, I'm not going to spend too much time there. We have, in terms of our the work, the PSC investigation of, on grievances that are referred to it, as well as the monitoring and management of grievances for all departments, has really enabled the PSC to address policy gaps and inconsistent practices and with specific departments. And also we work with DPSA in this area of work. And also the PSC's collaboration with bargaining councils enabled the PSC to advocate for the implementation of recommendations made in various grievance cases and labor relations reports through making presentations to departments at national and also at provincial level. So the next slide, again, we're still just giving the impact of the PSC's work in the area of leadership and management practices. There we are saying that the investigations by the PSC deal with specific incidents and cases, while that is augmented by our research and engagements, which address key issues at the broader policy level and popularize the findings and recommendations to the broader public service in order to ensure consistency, capacitate departments or group of employees across departments, and to prevent the recurrence of similar challenges. So in certain instances, when we analyze the trends of these cases, we would see that a particular department seems to be struggling, for instance, on PMDS, because the number of grievances coming from that department would be on PMDS. or the number of departments or the number of grievances on unfair labor practice would be emanating from a particular department. So what we do is, instead of waiting for those grievances to come one by one, then we'll have the engagement with that department to really get to the bottom of the issues and assist the department. As we move on, Chairperson, I would like to move to the next program, which is Program 3, the Monitoring and Evaluation. There we had two indicators. The first indicator was about the engagement and promotion of the constitutional values and principles as per Section 196A, that is the promotion and the evaluation. We had hope to have 10 engagements. We did 58, and largely this was exceeded due to invitations, and we had a number of invitations, particularly at local government, where those would have been exposed to the Public Service Commission promoting these values and principles were invited to come and also promote at that level, but also taking officials through what these values and principles mean and in terms of the behavior, but also institutionally in those institutions. We exceeded the target. The second one was on the CVP evaluations. The target was met. And as we move on, Chairperson, to the next slide, the additional outputs that were done in this area of work is that we did produce the State of the Public Service Report. We have engagements with the SCOA, and during the year under review, we engaged with them on two occasions, after the budget earlier in the year and later after the MTBPS was presented. And this kind of engagement seeks to focus on strategies available to significantly improve management practices in the public service. We touch on issues of governance across the public service, expenditures against budget and performance for national as well as for national and provincial departments, as well as opportunities for efficiency and effectiveness, as well as value for money. Also, Chairperson, during the year under review, we developed a guide on the constitutional values and principles, a pocket-sized guide that can be used by both members of the public service but also public servants. And for members of the public service, it's safe to say this is what you should expect when you interact with the public service. And for those in government, it seeks to say this is how we are supposed to conduct ourselves in the manner in which we do our work. Other additional outputs, Chairperson, included inspections that we have conducted. This took place both in the Eastern Cape in various hospitals, but also in Gauteng. I think we would be aware of the incidents that took place in Mamelodi. We visited that hospital quite a number of occasions, and I'm pleased to say that at the time that we left, a number of things had changed. A number of beds were provided following the incident of the lady that was chained to a chair there at the hospital, but also we engaged quite extensively with the various levels of the hospital around what these constitutional values and principles, and how, in addition to the professional ethics of those in the medical industry, what are the ethics imperatives of those that are in government and to serve the people of our nation. And various papers and opinion pieces were produced, and some were published, publicized in the media. I want to move on again to the next slide, again in terms of the impact of this area of work. We are very much worried about the issue of payment of suppliers. CFO did indicate that the PSC pays within 7 days, and we draw some of these lessons even internally to share with our departments, where we find them from our monitoring perspective that they have delays in terms of paying suppliers, and where suppliers are not paid, the PSC plays a very active role in terms of engaging not only with the public service. We engage with local government institutions and entities via the departments to really request them to pay those suppliers, but also to share with them what some of the lessons that could be learned to ensure that the suppliers are paid on time. I did indicate some of the impact in the hospitals in Mamelodi and also the one military hospital as well. There were some inroads that we made in that area of work. Chairperson, I need to move now to program four, which is about integrity and anti-corruption. There we had on this slide we're showing two indicators. The first one is about public administration investigations finalized within 3 months upon receipt of relevant information. The target was achieved or rather exceeded. We also produced a fact sheet on financial misconduct. That fact sheet was produced. As we move on to the next slide here, we are just showing again the trends in terms of the management of complaints over the 4 years, and you will see that in respect of the year under review, there has been a slight increase in the closure rate of cases, that is 68% 2018-19, but in 2019-20 it went to 71%. So I think we are hearing a number of people who are making use of the whistleblowing policy, but also our engagement, be it the code of conduct workshops that we have with officials, be it the constitutional values and principles, and key amongst them is the high standard of professional ethics that we engage with officials out there. This really then leads to a heightened awareness around these areas of work. As we move on, Chairperson, we have got other indicators. We have got percentage of the national anti-corruption hotline cases that are referred within 7 days. There, all of them, they have been referred to the necessary institutions. Also, we produced reports on the NAH cases, and also the financial disclosure framework and overview report has been produced. As we move on, we also do research work. We've produced a research report on the assessment of professional ethics in the public service that was done, and then the percentage of investigations on early resolution. These are the cases that do not necessarily require extensive investigation, and therefore we are able to resolve them with speed. So during the year under review, we had 42 cases, and those were resolved with speed. I just need to indicate, as we move to the additional outputs, is the closure rate of complaints of alleged corruption and those cases that were outstanding from the previous year. So we worked very hard to make sure that those were concluded. One of the items that the PSC conducts, obviously under the leadership of the MPSA, is the International Anti-Corruption Day, which was carried through on the 9th of December 2019. I need to indicate that for this year, again, will be the minister will be having the International Anti-Corruption Day again on the 9th of December this year. As we move on to the next slide, various ethics initiatives were implemented to encourage ethical behavior and integrate ethics into the public service. But also the PSC monitors the implementation of the financial disclosure framework by members of the SMS throughout the public service. To this end, we had 9,834 SMS members who submitted their financial disclosure forms on the due date, and which accounted for 97% of those. And we are busy engaging with EAs where, following the scrutiny of the financial disclosures, we are picking up potential or actual conflict of interest, requesting EAs to engage with those officials, but also to take action and report back to the Public Service Commission, where we are picking up those potential and actual conflict of interest. Chairperson, as we move to the last slide, really just around the impact of the work, some of the issues that I want to pick up on is the management of conflict of interest through the disclosure framework. It really ensures openness, transparency, and really mitigates against, to a certain extent, officials doing business with the state. So again here, the PSC, based on its assessment of the financial disclosure forms and the scrutiny, we do make an effort of engaging with those departments to get to the bottom of these issues, where we realized that a particular department might be showing a bit of a red flag in terms of the number of cases that we pick up that show that officials in that department have got potential or actual conflict of interest, so that these matters could be addressed, but also to help the ethics officers in that, in those departments, to really make sure that issues relating to ethical conduct are promoted. That brings me to the end of the presentation, Chairperson. I'm not sure whether the chair of the commission needs to add. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Honorable members, this report is now open for discussion. Can I see hands of members who want to speak? I see Honorable Soma. Who's next? Honorable Soma, you can speak now.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and also Jim and the team, and also the advocate and his team. I must register, Chair, that I had a challenge earlier on when we're dealing with the DPSA, but it can be followed in writing. May I read it for record purposes through your permission?
You are free to do that.
Thank you very much. I will request that DPSA in the near future, probably when we're dealing in the next quarter, when we're back from recess, they give us a picture of a sense of comfort with the housing scheme, with the employer housing scheme progress, whether are there any people or staff members who are taking advantage of that, and also how it's going to impact positively to the lives of our workforce in relation to the big project that was launched by the president sometime this year in Gauteng, which is a mega housing project. Because we are a caring government, and also those matters must worry us as well. That's one. Two, Chair, I will repeat myself on this one, that we are not applauding the fish for swimming, but however, where credit is due must be given, that the team, DPSA family, well done for making us proud. And I'm sure that you will also share your experience. How do you do it for other departments? Because my belief, Chair, is that it's not how much is under your control, but the systems are all the same, materially and otherwise. And one, I will urge that DPSA plays a central role on that. I know that they can't instruct the department, but they can give the relevant support as the DG has spoken to. The other one, Chair, that I would like, which is my second point, is the one that I would request the DG, if she can share the slide. I was going through my notes, I couldn't find it, where she was talking eloquently on the issue of what it needs to be done, and also to care, to deal with the issue of public servants doing government with the state or with government or with themselves, because they are part of the state of government. To say, if she can share that one, because I couldn't find it. My apologies, my reading was failing me on that. The other one that I would like to, in the near future, which she has promised, that as our checklist, that after we'll be waiting with the ICANET to see the finalization of the concurrence of the regulation, so that also we can look at the other spheres of government, and it will go a long way to make a difference in the public sector, not only moving towards a single public service, but also in terms of good corporate governance and ethics. I think, Chair, other than that, I'm happy that the advocate, lastly, Chair, on the subject matter now, is that he has spoken to the issue of the pending CEO issue, then we'll be awaiting the minister then to take the committee in confidence at his earliest convenience time. But also, I will still say this, that the PSC needs also to do more in terms of public perception image that might have been created, because before it has been doing very well and we must lead by example as Public Service Commission, but also in the near future for other areas that we did not have necessarily have looked at as a committee, that they must also come back and report to them. There are other areas that they look at and investigate that are of interest to us in terms of paying of declaration of financial interest, which DPSA does a report on that, but also the other related matters that they deal with, because they are not only reporting on the space that they've reported. We appreciate that because of COVID-19, they couldn't do on-site oversight, as it were. But they must come back to say, how are they going to take advantage of COVID-19 in using the technology in other areas that they are supposed to be dealing with? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Rusoma. Any comment, Advocate?
No, I welcome the comments that are made by Honorable Rusoma. We are really working on that, because she's quite correct. Our image was very knocked this year. We have written articles in the papers. We have gone out. We are now even looking for an expert within our organization to try and internalize the values, and also to review our systems and processes to check this thing. So, but we've gone out quite a lot with this webinar. It is amazing how much you can do. I've been talking to people in Egypt. I've joined most of the, and other colleagues do that also, most of the NGOs like Corruption Watch, PARI, and others, explaining the public service and what is done. And more importantly, we have increased writing in the papers, articles, and issuing statements on some of these things. But it's not enough. We need to do that. But more importantly, we accept that really this was not a finest moment for the public service, that we had that those allegations being made. And we're trying to correct that. Thank you very much. DG, can you handle the others.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you so much, Honorable Suma, for the comments. We take cognizance of the issue around the public image of the PSC, and as Chairperson has indicated, we are in the process really internally having conversations amongst ourselves in terms of the image and the posture of everyone within the commission, at the level of the commission, but also at the level of the office. Chairperson indicated that we'll have an expect. We are working on that, but even on our own, we are trying our best. The issue around reporting back to the committee, what I would like to undertake is that we will package a couple of things, including the report that we just have on the scrutiny of the financial disclosures. I know we presented on the NAH, and also on the 11th of November, we're supposed to have engaged with the committee on the state of the public service. But I would like to be requested to go back and just package all of that and say to the committee, here are some of the things that we'd really want to come in and brief the committee. And we'll obviously look into the using of technology to advance our work. We have started with the video conferencing, but that is more really for ourselves internally and communicating and so on. And we will explore as we go forward more of these opportunities now that COVID has also defined the new normal for us to do business. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Sorry, Irene, can you deal with, sorry, Chairperson, can Irene deal with that slide that Honorable Lesoma wanted to know what we do in the area of doing business with the state?
Okay. Irene, come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. on that slide, I was not sure whether Honorable Sumo was referring to the DPSA presentation, but from our side, basically what we pick up is that when we do the scrutiny, we will look at various areas, whether it's assets and directorships and so on, and also the what we call the central supplier database as well, and we begin to pick up all of this. So then we package the information in terms of whether we pick up potential conflict of interest or actual conflict of interest. Then the commission would write to the EA outlining all those officials who would be implicated in that particular department, to say this is the report from the PSC and this is what we are picking up from our financial disclosure scrutiny, and requesting the EA to ensure that these matters are addressed, but also to come back to the commission with the report. And we are receiving the letters coming from the EAs. I've seen a couple of them that have passed through my office where we are highlighting those issues, and some of them where we are thanking them for really taking action on those officials. Written warnings are being issued, disciplinary processes are being executed where actual conflict of interest is being picked up. So basically that is how the commission is raising the matter of potential or actual conflict of interest and where people are doing business with the state.
At this point, let me thank the Honorable Deputy Minister and the Chairperson of the Public Service Commission, Advocate Suzani, for the presentation our committee. Thank you very much once again.
Thank you, sir.
We have now come to the end of the Portfolio Committee meeting, and therefore the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much to all of you, honorable members, members of the staff. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
Honorable Clerk, I thought you were to praise us for a good job. Honorable Clerk.
Thank you, DM. Thank you very much.
Thank you.